Good Wednesday to you. Thank you so much for tuning in to another edition of NRA News. Cam and Company, sponsored by our friends at Nosler, and we are coming to you from SHOT Show 2016. Thanks to our broadcast sponsor, AdCore Defense, our remote broadcast sponsor. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. It is good to be with you this afternoon. We are coming to you from the Sands Convention Center in Las Vegas, Nevada, where the aisles are full. A small city. That is what SHOT Show really is. You've got over 50,000 people within the industry who are here all week long. And I want to kick off today's broadcast by welcoming our friend Benny Spies to the program. Benny coming out of the green room there. How you doing, Benny?
Good to see you, buddy.
It's good to see you, man.
I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah?
Not SHOT Show right
just
here.
Just right here.
Right here.
I'm excited that you are here.
Well, I thank you for having me on. Did you have all that memorized, what you were just saying right there?
The Second Amendment? Yeah.
That whole
thing.
Start this thing off.
It just flows.
You are good at what you do. Are you going to write a book? I need to read your book.
You do need to read
some,
my book.
I need
book.
Some tips.
I think... So you're talking about the book Heavy Lifting, Grow Up, Get a Job, Start a Family, and Other Manly Advice.
Yeah, that one.
I think you're kind of getting it done, buddy. I got to say, man.
I'm working on it.
You are an entrepreneur. You are a fantastic TV personality.
Yeah, well.
You know?
Rumors are true. Look at your setup here. This looks cool, man. You have all kinds of guys working. Boomer Esiason's working for you over there.
Yeah.
You got some people. Who knew? Football season's over. You hire Boomer.
Yeah, you know he needs something to do in the winter, right? He's not playing football
You're
anymore.
A heck of a guy. Bring him over here.
We do what we can. We like to make sure that former athletes and television personalities have, you know, an opportunity for gainful employment.
So if I, you know, the TV show goes away and all those things, I know I have a job.
You ever walk? You got to bring the toaster with you.
We will do this out of the toaster.
That would be
remotes.
Fun. That would be fun.
Live remotes.
From the toaster.
Wherever you want to go.
All right. Is there a little microwave dish? Can we put a satellite dish on top of the toaster?
We can do whatever you want.
Fantastic.
Wings. We can put an outboard motor on it and fish out of it.
Yeah?
You name it, we can do it. Ice fish out. This time of year, ice fishing.
Okay, so help me out here, because the show that you have on Sportsman Channel is
Gun It with Benny Spies.
Gun It with Benny Spies.
Presented by Leupold.
Okay. Make sure you get the sponsors in. It's very important to get the sponsors in.
Nailed it.
Do you have that memorized?
I just nailed it.
But it is more than just shooting on your show.
Oh, yeah. It's a reality show. It's a lifestyle show. It's a character-driven, story-driven show. And it's based around one word, fun.
Because you talk about it being a reality show. How scripted is Gun It with Benny Spies? Do you have an idea? Like, do you have a basic storyline for every episode?
Yeah, we have a basic storyline for every episode. I think in 7 years filming, we have scripted out one little scene, one little segment. Is because we couldn't find the right little river where the frozen water was. We had to park the toaster in it. So we had to set that up. That is all that's really been set up. So in 7 years, that's not too bad. So you take, it's probably about 100 shows times four, that's 400 segments. One, that ain't bad.
That's not bad at all.
That's thinking on your feet. That's my head. This is my foot right here, Cam. It's thinking on my feet.
And you've got, you're in the process of filming right now.
We are.
Well,
not
right this second. But,
well, we are. We got cameras right here.
Yeah.
So
this is going to show
your
up.
Show.
Feel free to use any of this on Gun It with Benny Spies
we can.
If you want.
Okay,
yeah,
okay. Absolutely. Well, that's making me look better because I need as much as I can. We're six shows in. We have four left to go. We have some awesome shows to film this spring with Lumacraft, boats and everything. So we're just getting kind of started again. So it's going to be fun. Well, snow geese going to start flying again up north soon. So.
Yeah.
I might try the bear hunt again this spring and see if I can't stroke out at 9,000 feet. Life alert. Turkey hunting and all that stuff. So we're rolling.
How much
to come out and hunt with me.
I know. We keep saying this. And I do want to make it out to South Dakota because, hey, you're there. But, you know, I was just talking with somebody from the state of South Dakota yesterday. And they're bringing in dozens of businesses within the industry.
Bring it in.
They're moving to South Dakota.
Bring all of them in. I don't know who you're talking to, but I like that guy.
I'm sure
he should be talking
do.
To me.
He said that they've got, I think, 91 businesses that are within
91.
The industry that have moved to South Dakota. And I asked, you know, are they
Are they concentrated like in one area? And he said, you know, they kind of started in, was it Sioux Falls?
Sioux Falls.
Yeah. But he said now Sturgis.
Yeah,
and,
Rapid City, that area, right? They do a lot out there too. Yep, I know like Black Hills Ammo is a few other ones out there.
Is South Dakota, is it changing? Is it growing? Is it still the same state that you grew up in?
South Dakota is a beautiful state. I don't want to give away the secrets. I want people moving there and shooting my birds, Cam.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Are you?
South Dakota is a wonderful state. South Dakota is a beautiful state. South Dakota has, on the eastern side of the state, you have the beautiful farm ground, farm country, glacial lakes, the walleye fishing can't get any better over there. The waterfowl hunting, the pheasant hunting is the best in the world right there. Then you go out to the Missouri River, pier area. It's everything D and all the above there as well. The pheasants, the walleyes, the waterfowl is great. And then you start moving west and you get that Kevin Costner from Dances with Wolves. It still looks like that out there, you know, and that's deer country and grouse and still got a lot of pheasants out there. And then you go to the Black Hills. Now you're in the mountains. You go to Deadwood, and that's where we're going to go, Deadwood.
We're going to go to Deadwood?
Yeah. We're going to drink beer and we're going to gamble.
That sounds like a plan.
I know you do that.
Well, on occasion.
Boomer Esiason does it. You don't like that.
He does not, no. That's Mike Aiken, if you want to use his real name. Talk with a friend, Benny Spies, again from Gunning with Benny Spies. Hopefully the audience has watched the program. If not,
if you have it, you should.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it really is a fun show, and that's what I like about it, is that it's not your... It's not, you know, 2 minutes in.
No, we've got to,
when's the dead deer coming? As you say, it really is personality driven.
Yep.
You are, you're quite the personality.
There's a lot of moving parts. We do a lot of different things. We drive around that old Winnebago, the Toaster 73, or the old Chevelle 65. It's a secret weapon. You know, we got the new boat, the Aluma Craft, the Willie Nelson. You know, there's a lot of moving parts, and we have a lot of fun.
Why is the boat called the Willie Nelson?
Because my old man, when I was a kid, would take me fishing or whatever, wherever we were going hunting or fishing. He had one tape, and it was stuck into the cassette tape in the pickup, and it was always On the Road Again. It's the only song that I have, my first favorite song, so I dedicated the boat to Willie Nelson.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's the true
Does
story.
Does the Chevelle have a name?
The Chevelle's a secret weapon, yeah.
It's just the secret weapon.
That's not running right now. Nothing of mine runs.
No?
No, the boat does, but nothing of mine runs.
Do you actually, like, tow the toaster?
Yeah, the toaster would be better off on fire.
But it's iconic.
It is iconic.
You can't. You'll never be able to get rid of that thing.
I hope I don't have to. I hope I can keep doing this. And where I go, the toaster goes.
Right.
That's the plan.
So you're saying that you don't want to show up here 1 year and be like, instead of the toaster, you've got the bread oven, which is like the 80-foot-long concert tour bus.
Well, that means we've upgraded a little bit.
Yeah.
But I still want it to be in the 70s. You know, we need the shag carpet. You know, we need it smelling like the 70s. There's more mice living in that thing right now. That I have a trap line actually set up in there, and I put a big jar of peanut butter at the end of it. I say, if you guys can make it through that, Godspeed. Good for you. You enjoy the peanut butter. That's a true story. I do have that in there right now.
Really?
You'll see there's a few my Instagram deal, Benny Spies on Instagram. You know, there's some pictures on there. Yeah, we have fun with it.
That's awesome.
You need to come out and hang out.
You know, I do, and I want to. Even if I have to take vacation, because it's hard
South
doing.
South Dakota is.
Yes, it's right in the middle of the country. Well, up to the north, but right there in the midsection.
Yeah,
I get
the midsection.
I I know where South Dakota is, but you know when you do a show Monday through Friday, it does take a little bit to get to South Dakota.
Do the cords stretch there from? Because we could, you know, you could still have everybody working back home and then drive out there.
Just maybe get like the really long tin can
extension cords. They make them.
Well, you've been to Farmville, so you're right. I do need to make it to South Dakota.
I've been to your place. It's a wonderful place. I'm a little jealous.
You need to come back.
I'd love to come back.
Well, you know, we've got.
Are you ending this right now? Because I have to give you a present.
No, I'm not ending this right now.
Okay.
But I was actually going to tell you, we've got the, and I think it's because you and Scott Laseth showed up in Farmville, but now we've got the vice presidential debate this year is going to be in Farmville, Virginia. Did you know that?
They didn't ask me to be a part of it.
Well, I'm asking you now. You can come down and be part of our coverage.
I would love. Okay, I'm in.
You got the
producers are telling me I'm in, so I'm in. Obviously, it's going to come out of your budget.
We'll get you there somehow. I'll give you gas for the toaster.
You don't know. No. As a friend, I'll tell you.
If you can fix it to the point that it can drive to Virginia, I'll pick up the gas for that. That gas guzzler, that 5 miles per gallon toaster.
That's downhill with the wind at your back and crossing your fingers. and saying a big prayer to the man upstairs.
Right.
If it can make it that far.
So tell me, this is obviously not your first time at SHOT Show. Far from it.
I'm a seasoned vet.
It's gotten a lot bigger, Benny.
It's big. Well, these booths weren't. I know people who are watching or whatever can't see these booths, but they're all the way out here now.
Right. We're on the third level. We've got two more floors above us. I mean, this thing
There's
is
two plus that I haven't. Wow.
Yeah.
Holy moly!
You will not see the entire show. I guarantee it.
I'm not going to try.
What is that?
I came here to hang out with you.
That was it.
That's it. I'm going home after this.
Well, that's good. I'm glad that you did that. But I mean, how has the industry grown and changed while you've been a part of it?
Well, it's. I mean, geez, where do I start with that? Look at the amount of people here. You can start by looking at thousands. How many people come through here? 100,000?
I think it's like 50, 60.
See, exactly, 100,000 people come through here. You know, I mean, we got
100,000
exhibits everywhere. 100,000 feet. I mean, you can clearly see by this the impact this industry has on the world, and it's great to see people from around the world. And the different products you get to see. And, I mean, you see everything here for the first time. And this is all 2,000 brand-new stuff we all get to see while we're here. I mean, it's big, man. I don't know if I offered you much insight right there. But.
Well, as the industry has gotten bigger, has that grown your audience and the audience for outdoor programming?
Well, I hope it does, you know, obviously, for Sportsman's Channel and everybody. But there's a lot of moving parts to this. The more people you see here, hopefully the network and hopefully our job, you know, as a producer, as a host, as a television personality, we all do our job and we can expand the demographics, expand the brands.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Are you seeing that when you go and you make appearances? Are you getting...
Yep. But the show's been on for a while, too. So,
right.
You know, when the show first kicked off, you know, it took a little bit of time to, you know, gain the audience. But now that we've been on for a while, it's nice to see people and be recognized and talk with people. That's the best part of what I do is... You know, I'm kind of like the every outdoorsman of the outdoors. You know, I'm the one guy that, you know, I'm a regular dude, man, and that's what I show on my show, and that's the best part of talking to so many people around here is they want to talk about pheasant hunting or they want to talk about deer hunting, they want to talk about duck hunting, just a casual conversation amongst friends having a good time, and at the end of the day, I guess, you know, it's about talking about having fun.
How do you, because you said you've been doing this 7 seasons now, right?
Filming our 7th.
Right now. How do you keep it fresh? How do you keep it different every season?
That's the good part about Gunnit is we can always do different storylines. And a lot of stuff's done out of South Dakota, so it's with my buddies on their ranches. Or, you know, we involve the toaster in a different way or involve, you know, the local community a different way or whatever. You know, we don't have a set format. We don't have a set, like, a deer shoot show, you know, that, you know, we're going to, you know, set up the show. We're going to go hunt the deer. We're going to shoot the deer, stalk the deer, shoot at the deer, whatever. For me, it's shooting at it. And I don't know, we close out the show. There's just a lot of moving parts, and that's what kind of keeps it fresh is just but putting the right people around me, too. So I have the producers and the people that can help keep it moving.
How big is your crew, the
two.
Production crew? That's it?
Two. I mean, in the fields, too. Yeah,
yeah.
Another guy. But my buddies are idiots.
Wait, that two includes you?
Yeah.
So it's you and a
camera producer, guy. Shooter, editor, guy, yeah.
Jack of all trades.
The best part about it is my buddies are crazy enough to where there's never a lack of ideas. And they have wide open spaces to go wreck something or do something fun or, you know, or if we're engaging, you know, we're hunting something or fishing for something, you know, they have the ground to be able to do that too. So that's, I'm pretty spoiled that way.
I gotta say, I'm actually really surprised. I never, watching the show, I never thought it was a single camera show.
Well, it's kind of turned into that. So you have a great observation there. In the early years, there was two or three cameras rolling around. Then it went to two, and hey, love budgets. Now we're at one.
Well, I think it says, excuse me, it says a lot about, just a little choked up here. But I know, I think it says a lot about the guy that you have working for you and working
with
you.
It's a team. I'm not going to toot my own horn and say it's all me by any means. I mean, it takes a lot of innovation and a lot of thinking and a lot of thinking on your toes. And there's a lot of, you know, from everywhere we're setting up cameras to interview spots to, you know, camera blocking the toaster sitting next to a barn. You know, there's just, I don't know how to do that stuff. I'm just the idiot that talks.
All right, now we're getting ready to wrap up this segment.
What?
So I know, I'm sorry. We got to take a break in a minute. But I do want to ask you, the show is about fun. You are a very... a fun, happy-go-lucky kind of guy. Are you concerned at all as we head into this election year? Are you concerned about...
I'm as concerned as everybody else is.
Yeah?
Yeah, of course. Of course. I mean, aren't we always concerned a little bit?
Yeah.
Without getting too political.
Well, I'm asking you to get
the same way you do.
Here,
I think the same way you do. I vote the same way you do.
You're gonna be speaking out. You're gonna be getting involved. Can we count on you to knock on some doors?
I will do my absolute best. I always got to make sure I'm doing the right thing and saying the right thing. So I don't want to screw anything up or say the wrong thing. There's a few things. Normally, it's just kind of, lack of a better term, diarrhea of the mouth. I just kind of let things fly, and just, if it turns out great, great. But if it doesn't, whatever. But I just that's one topic that I don't. That I am very vocal about in my own little strategic ways that I care as genuine and as you do about. For 100,000% true. If that isn't even a number, but I do.
It is now.
It is now. We made it. Hold on. Before you go, you kick me off.
Yes.
I always bring you a gift.
And I appreciate that.
What size are you now?
Large.
All right. This is extra large. Just a
That'll
case.
Work.
Look at that right
oh,
there.
Oh, look at that.
See me?
That is beautiful. And look at that. You can find this at Cabela's. I noticed the Cabela's
you
tag.
They should sell it, but it's not there right now. We're working on getting them over there. This was just a special promo deal we did last year for Pheasant Opener in South Dakota. They sold at the Mitchell, South Dakota store, but I had a few of them left, and I wanted to make sure I gave my good buddy Cam one, in case you forgot who gave it to you. It's right there on the back,
that
my
is,
name.
That is beautiful. Well, I have my toaster shirt, and if I...
For you, buddy.
Oh, thank you, Benny.
With love.
If I ever get my own line of apparel... You will get the first one.
The first one.
You will, as soon as it rolls off.
I want
the
you
line,
to do tank tops.
That would be. I just don't ask me to model.
Oh no. Calendar.
Oh,
calendar model.
That would be
every month
awful.
It's a different tank top shot.
That would just be the worst thing.
Tank
ever.
Top and a bikini briefs. That's what we need to see. Not me personally, but
nobody,
these guys.
Really, nobody.
They want
to,
these guys want you doing the show wearing that right here.
No, they really don't. I trust me on
do.
That.
I don't think
the audience wants that. I think maybe you're the only one.
Right, and, you know what? I always.
And I will not be your private dancer, Vinny Spies.
Thank you.
Listen, I appreciate you coming on the program. It is always good seeing you.
Thank you.
Love you too, man. We'll talk again soon.
Sounds good. And
I will make it to South Dakota this year.
Oh, yeah.
Let's go do some fishing.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again.
All right, we got to take a quick timeout. When we come back, Chris Ching will be with us. Steve Hallberg coming up later on in the hour as well. Stick around. More of our coverage from SHOT Show 2016 continues right after this.
Speaking with Bethany Mullen with NRA Community Outreach about the NRA Refused to Be a Victim program. Tell us, Bethany, what's the program all about?
Well, Refuse to Be a Victim is a crime prevention and a personal safety program. It was created in 1993 by the women of the NRA. It was created specifically for people who didn't feel comfortable carrying firearms, but they still wanted to take a proactive role in their safety. It was women only from 93 to 97, but now it's open up to everybody since people realize that regardless of whether or not you do carry a firearm, there are situations that you want to be aware of so you can... stay safe in your everyday life.
So this is a very successful program for NRA. Why was it important that NRA offer a program like this?
Just for people that, like I said, didn't feel comfortable carrying a firearm but still wanted to create a safety plan for themselves. It's really comprehensive. It goes over a whole bunch of different things. It's a four-hour seminar format. It goes over personal safety, travel security, home security, cybersecurity, a whole bunch more. Everyone that attends a seminar does get a comprehensive safety handbook with a lot of stuff that can't even be covered in the 4 hours. And it's just a lot of good tips that you can integrate into your everyday life to avoid becoming a victim of crime.
That's awesome. And the program, Bethany, has continued to grow and evolve now. Way you mentioned cyber. There's so much security, not only around you physically, but online and everything else you got to be aware of as well.
Yeah.
So who's a typical person who takes this program? You said it's not just women, men and women.
Correct. We really have a wide audience. We're working with a lot of police departments because it is just such a great community outreach. So they offer it to their community. A lot of people go to senior centers and talk to people that live in the senior centers. We're also working with a lot of schools and colleges because that's such a vulnerable age. You know, a lot of 18-year-olds leaving home for the first time. And college campuses, you know, obviously seem very safe, but... behind the scenes, there's a lot that goes on, and so we want to make people aware of how to stay safe.
How do you get more information about NRA Refuse to Be a Victim?
Well, you can go online to refuse.nra.org or email us at refuse@nrahq.org.
I'm here at the NRA World Shooting Championship with Dwayne Liptak of Magpul. Dwayne, you guys are a major sponsor here. Thanks for what you're doing. Tell folks, what is Magpul?
Magpul is actually primarily a design and engineering company, and we've applied that at first primarily to firearms accessories, and as we continue to broaden our horizons, we've gone into other areas. But we started with the AR with one single product. Now we make hundreds of products, and we support many different firearms platforms.
How did you end up evolving into the firearms area from this design area?
Well, no, we started with a firearms product. The very first product was the Magpul, designed by our founder and CEO, who basically cashed in his 401k and bought a mold to make one product and fulfilled orders out of his basement. And now, like I said, we're making hundreds and hundreds of products. So.
I mean, isn't it a great country when someone literally can do that? Cash in the 401k, you got a great idea, and Magpul has become like industry standard.
It's been a phenomenal journey and ride, and I'm very happy to be a part of it. So
Dwayne, tell us about some of the other Magpul products. Give us a couple highlights.
A couple highlights. This year has been very big. We've gone into the AK platform in a large way with both the Zhukov and the Mo lines. We've also gone into bolt action rifles with the Hunter 700 and the Ruger 10/22 platform with our X22 stock. We're also going into handguns as well with a series of Glock magazines with a lot more surprises on the way.
You're going to be a busy guy.
I am always a busy guy.
So, Dwayne, how can people get more information about Magpul?
www.magpul.com, where we have all of our products for sale, as well as all the information about upcoming products and releases.
All right, we got about 20 seconds here. Tell folks why they should check out the Magpul product.
Magpul product is because we are a design and engineering focused company, we love to solve problems in a way that benefits the consumer as far as ergonomic fit and that user experience and interface, as well as the most reliable and durable products out there, because we put a lot of engineering and time and testing behind those.
Dwayne Liptak with Magpul, thank you, sir, for being on NRA News.
Thank you, sir.
Welcome back to NRA News, Cam and Company. Take a look at the factory floor at Adcore Defense up in Baltimore, our remote broadcast sponsor this year at SHOT Show and more. I want to thank the folks at Adcore. We're going to actually go down to the Adcore booth, the Nosler booth, as soon as we wrap up here this afternoon and do some interviews. And I want to welcome to the program right now, you know him, you love him, Chris Jing is with us. How are you, Chris?
Hey, good morning, Cam. I'm doing fantastic.
I always want to introduce you as Top Shot Champion, but you're so much more than that now. I mean, it's really your career has just taken off and expanded. I mean, you're doing a lot of different stuff right now.
Yeah, so one of the main things that I'm really excited about this year is a company called Mason Target Systems. And so I'm an investor and an advisor for the company. And essentially what our product is, it's an electronic smart target system. So imagine an AR-500 steel plate with sensors hooked up to it. You shoot the plate, your shot location shows up on your mobile device, right? Your iPad, your iPhone. Then the problem that we're trying to solve for here is, you know, imagine if you're at the range, you're shooting out at 200 yards, you've got some paper target down there. You shoot, you have to then break off the gun to look through the spotting scope and trying to remember, all right, which was shot number 19 and which one was shot number 20, and
right.
You're trying to figure out, you know, where your shot location is. So trying to make that whole process of collecting your shot data, right, in the mobile app. There's a whole cloud account that you can have in Mason Target Systems, paired with a virtual gun locker, and it reduces the need for a range to go cold. And so no more calling the range cold to go walk down, mm-hmm. Check and change targets. And ultimately, the technology is empowering shooters to shoot more. Right? We want the technology layer to just disappear. It's just a part. It's just something that works, mm-hmm. and you can just keep shooting, and you can see where your shot locations are showing up on your mobile device.
That's actually really cool. And so is this available now? Is this still in development? And where are we?
It is available today at masontargetsystems.com. It's something that I and the founder, Greg Mason, we have a bigger team. We've been working on it for a good 2 years plus. Getting a lot of feedback from the industry, from the military, a lot of law enforcement agencies, and we are really excited to finally pull the curtain back and do the big announcement that Mason Target Systems is here. At a very high level, before I won Top Shot, I was at Google, mm-hmm. right, working in Silicon Valley in technology. And one of the great things about Google and a lot of tech products is that they're simple and easy to use, right, that from a design perspective, you can just give someone an iPhone, right, or show someone a Google, you know, Google.com. Mm-hmm. It's just easy to use.
Right.
So if you take that design principle of something that's easy to use, right, bring that to the firearms space. How do we make technology easy to use when you're shooting guns to provide useful information and feedback around, all right, look at my groups when I'm shooting my pistol. They're all going, you know, low to the right, but I can capture all of that shooting data session information. And so making things easy to use for people is something that, for me, I wanted to bring to Mason Target Systems. And again, it's all about how do we make shooting more pleasurable and more useful for people who want to go shoot targets.
This is really interesting. Now, you know, of course, there are going to be a lot of gun control advocates who are saying, Chris, why are you expending all of this time and energy on something like this? You should be working on smart gun technology. You should be working on, you know, the biometric fingerprinting system for guns. But this is practical.
Yes.
This is something that I think is a natural evolution of technology. And you know, we talk about ways that that this industry has evolved. You know, we've got folks who are working on smart guns, and we'll see if there's a market for it. But it seems to me like there's always going to be a market for products that help you shoot better, that help your training, that help you understand what you're doing right and what you're doing wrong.
Correct. And, you know, this is ultimately, I think, you know, we're listening to the market, right? We're listening to what shooters, the problems they have, the challenges they have, the range. You know, we've been talking to, you know, hundreds of shooters, you know, plenty of range owners. And so, you know, for a shooter, right, that whole back and forth of, you know, calling the range cold, it's downtime. That's just, you know, when you call a range cold to go walk down 200 yards to change and check targets, mm-hmm. it's a waste of time for the shooter. It's a waste of time for the range. Or if you're a military or law enforcement agency, it's downtime, right? Like, you could save that time by using a Mason Target Systems target and putting more rounds down range because you're there to shoot. You're not there to just sit around and watch people, you know, change targets.
Right.
Or, you know, if you're taking a picture of your paper target and then, you know, transcribing that into some kind of range log, that's the kind of process we want to just remove, and your shooting data automatically, right, gets uploaded into your online profile.
That's amazing. All right, so I got to ask, though, about privacy.
Yes.
You know, are there any security safeguards in there? I don't necessarily want some hacker to break into the system and all of a sudden know, hi, I'm Cam. Here's where I live.
Right.
I'm a gun owner, and
yeah,
here's how I shoot.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, like, I don't
and here's the weapon. Yeah, here are the guns that I have, you know, because we have a virtual gun locker
right.
as well. And so, you know, on the privacy note, you do not need to use the internet.
Okay.
To use our system. So if you want to use the web, right, and upload your profile and shooter data to, you know, our servers, which, you know, are absolutely secure, mm-hmm. You don't have to do that. There's a base station that communicates with the target, and that is a closed environment. If you want it to be completely closed, you're right, so no one can, you know, kind of see what's going on in your shooting environment, you can do that. So, the security and privacy piece was something that came up, early
right.
in our discussions with shooters. So we made sure that Mason Target Systems respects people's privacy, and ultimately it's a choice that every shooter can make whether to make their information available to their friends, to their instructors, or if they want to have that closed private environment.
And you know, we're seeing around the country a lot of these quote-unquote country clubs opening up, and I think a lot of ranges, even older ranges, are getting their upgrades, right? They're modernizing. They want to become a more welcome place.
Yes.
We're seeing everything from the architecture or just the environment kind of change for a lot of ranges. And so this kind of sounds like this kind of goes hand in hand with that. I mean, if you are, is this something that is affordable for, you know, even smaller ranges out there?
Yeah, absolutely. So on the first piece, you know, everyone is becoming much more comfortable with technology. Right. I mean, you know, most of us are checking our phones probably 50, 60, maybe even hundreds of times a day, right, for whatever, your Facebook update, read the news. And so the idea around how do we make ranges more inviting, right, for especially the new shooter, right? And so I look at Mason Target Systems as a way of empowering users to come shoot a gun through technology, right? You know how to use an iPad or your iPhone. It's something that many people are comfortable with. And the technology, again, is seamless to make that shooting experience a better one. On the second piece, the affordability, we're looking at an MSRP of about $2,500. So smaller ranges can definitely afford this. We're cheaper than the competition in terms of if you're looking at other smart electronic smart targets in the space. We come in at about half the price for a target. And one thing that I really love about our design principle is that we're looking at simplicity and it's rugged, right? So if something breaks, it's designed to be repaired out in the field. So some of our competitors, if the electronic system breaks, the whole system's down until you call the technician to come to your range and service it. That's not the design principle that we have in mind. A range owner can have, some spare parts on hand, service it in the field and, get back up and running, because we know uptime is a big focus for ranges.
Absolutely. All right, listen, well, I've got you here. I've got to ask you a couple of questions about California.
Sure.
And firearms. I think it wasn't too long ago that we were talking about the closure of the last gun store in San Francisco, Highbridge Arms, closing down. And, there were a lot of people who were very gleeful about that happening. They say that these restrictions weren't designed to get rid of gun stores in San Francisco, and yet I didn't see a lot of the supporters of these new ordinances shedding any tears over Highbridge Arms closing and the fact that we don't have any gun stores in San Francisco.
Yeah,
now.
No, the whole, Highbridge Arms, which was my home gun store in San Francisco, seeing it close down because of an anti-gun political agenda was really heartbreaking. It's one thing to say, hey, if something like a gun store closing would actually help improve public safety, if that was an actual truth, that'd be one thing. But Highbridge Arms, they didn't have, they weren't seeing like large amounts of straw purchases, guns sold from the store, were not ending up, scenes of the crime. So there was just there's no material positive impact on public safety by seeing the gun shop close. We're just seeing the increased politicization of firearms. California, we've got a new anti-gun, anti-assault weapons bill that's making its way through the legislature. And, all these, add-ons are being attached to the bill.
Right.
This is going to be, like many years, a very, very challenging legislative lobbying, grassroots battle between, the pro-gun and anti-gun, factions.
And we've got a referendum, apparently, that Gavin Newsom, the lieutenant governor, is running for governor, is trying to put on the ballot that would add even more restrictions. At some point, as a California gun owner, you love your state.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to leave because, the laws have changed. But at some point, have you ever thought about where would I go if it got to the point where I couldn't do what I do
right.
and live where I live?
Yeah, I get this question a lot, and the way I look at it is this. I'm a native Californian, born there. My family, my friends are there. A lot of my professional, colleagues from Silicon Valley are there. But ultimately, it boils down to this. If we don't have people in California who support our Second Amendment rights staying there and fighting the good fight, then of course we will lose, right? We will lose if people leave. So people, like myself and other people who support our Constitution and Second Amendment rights, if you live in California, we all need to stick together. I donate, a fair amount of, money and more importantly, my time and my voice to speak out against, former, mayor of San Francisco, Gavin Newsom, who's also our lieutenant governor, and, Kamala Harris, who's our California Attorney General, who's running for U.S. Senate. Mm-hmm. She's got, an anti-gun, proposal in the works as well. And so the more voices we have in California supporting our Second Amendment rights, right, that increases our likelihood that we will win.
Yeah, are you seeing gun owners in California become more politically active?
It's definitely a trend, which is great, right, to see more Californians politically active in the Second Amendment grassroots space. And I think a lot of it has to do with more voices, right, speaking up. When you have more voices talking about supporting Second Amendment rights, it gives other people the courage to also speak up. if you think that you are in an anti-gun environment, and of course, yes, in California, right, that is the case. But when you find, right, that the pockets of people who support our Second Amendment rights, right, we all bond together, mm-hmm. right? We're stronger, right, with in numbers. That's where any kind of grassroots initiative, you gain your strength by coordinating and working together. And so, you know, the California Rifle Pistol Association, the CalGuns Foundation, the Firearms Policy Coalition are three very strong local and statewide organizations in California that I work with. And we're seeing, you know, a lot of new members, a lot of new voices, you know, showing up. And it's really great to see that momentum.
That's good. And we are seeing this, you know, again, in places like San Francisco and the L.A. area. Actually, I ran into a couple of folks earlier today who are down in the Redondo Beach area,
mm-hmm.
And they're part of the NRA members councils. They are, you know, they're volunteers, they're getting involved politically, but they're also firearms instructors. And, you know, even in the most anti-gun community, like I always talk about when we talk about crime, I say, you know, even in the highest crime neighborhoods, we've got more good people than bad.
Right.
Even in the most anti-gun places in California, you will find Second Amendment advocates living there. It's not that it's 100% anti-gun. When San Francisco had Prop H about 10 years ago, their proposed handgun ban,
mm-hmm.
For over 40% of the city voted no on that handgun ban. I would not have expected that in San Francisco.
Right, and so right, you have a lot of gun owners who are often silent,
mm-hmm.
right, because there's a kind of an intimidation factor or a shaming element, right, where if I'm a gun owner and I speak up, I think I'm, you know, gonna get pushback, you know, from my anti-gun, you know, friends and family, when, you know, that's not always the case. I would say, you know, there's your pro-gun people, your anti-gun people, but there's a large chunk in the middle who are just neutral, right? They honestly, I've run into so many people who just don't have an opinion,
right,
about the Second Amendment, about an individual's right to bear arms, use a gun in, you know, in self or personal defense. And so, right, if we think about it just from a numbers perspective, there's this huge undecided, right, this sort of like the political undecided, you know, demographic. And a lot of those people do not have opinions, right? And so if you don't have an opinion, that's where it's even more important for those of us who support Second Amendment rights to engage those people so that they understand our perspective. And I hope they also understand the anti-gun perspective. And ultimately, at the end of the day, understand both perspectives, make your own choice. But for me personally, it's all about freedom and supporting American values, because that's what the Second Amendment is all about, is to give us the individual right to protect ourselves against a tyrannical government, but also our natural right to defend ourselves.
Absolutely. Chris, listen, unfortunately, we got to take a break. I could talk with you all afternoon, but
I'd love to stay, but yeah.
It's great seeing you again, man. I hope we get a chance to catch up again soon.
And, indeed.
And again, thanks for everything that you do for our rights.
And thank you as well. Thanks for having me on today.
My pleasure. Chris Chang joining us. And again, the Mason Target Systems is the name of the company that Chris was talking about. We do have to take a quick break here at SHOT Show 2016. When we come back, Steve Holbrook, Second Amendment attorney and scholar, is going to join us. So stick around. We'll be right back with more right after this.
I'm speaking with Greg Foster with DeSantis. Greg, welcome back to NRA News. Tell us what's going on with DeSantis.
Well, we continue to come back as sponsors again for the NRA Law Enforcement Division and the National Police Shooting Championships. We've done this for many, many years, and DeSantis has come on board and are full-blown sponsors now and continue to support the law enforcement, because it's such a major part of our business, not just the commercial, but all the law enforcement as well.
Well, that's awesome. Tell folks who don't know, what is DeSantis? What do you guys do?
DeSantis is an American-made leather holster. We also do Kydex, which we'll talk about that in a minute. But our foundation, our teeth were cut on basically leather, the concealable leathers. We supply numerous federal agencies and law enforcement agencies, the undercover or the investigation side, with a very high-quality leather holster that allows for good, comfortable fit and good strength to hold the firearm in place.
So where are we at, Greg, with leather versus the other types of holsters? Well, what's better and why? Or is there a better?
Yeah, it's really kind of six of one, half a dozen the other, because old guys like myself love leather. When I'm wearing something concealed, I like the leather. It's tighter. It doesn't print, doesn't show as readily. Yet there's guys that love the Kydex because it's just good and solid and rugged. I have both. I do both, but I mostly wear leather, and a lot of people do wear leather. Sometimes we were terming yesterday. Somebody said, well, they've got their go-to-barbecue holster, well, or Sunday go to meeting holster. Well, that's, you know, sometimes that's a really nice, high quality, custom made leather holster. But then you move on into the Kydex, the rugged, the guys in the tactical teams, you know, the duty wear has to be solid. It has to be, you know, it doesn't get beat up. The Kydex does hold up very strong.
Let's take a look at that.
So you're actually looking at, we even do a combination where it's not only a Kydex holster, but a leather belt loop. So again, that will allow it to form better to the hip for that type of wear, for that concealment wear. So it stays closer, stays in tighter. Even a lot of guys are going to a Kydex that is inside the pant. And, you know, I'm one of those kind of almost like Oklahoma people, show me state. I wore this around for probably 30 days with a pistol in it just to check and see how it felt. What I found was that the leather backing combined with the Kydex was pretty comfortable, and it worked very well. So then you step on out into the full duty gear and into the tactical gear where you got, you know, whether it's on the belt loop itself, or on the duty belt itself, or on the tactical thigh rig. The full hard Kydex leathers with the security levels of security up to level 4. I mean, it's really meant to address that end of the pendulum also. One of the things that DeSantis does is a modular system that allows you to buy one holster, put it on your tactical thigh rig, move it to your duty belt loop rig. If that way it's that same holster, but you're just moving it to your belt loop, or you can put it up on your vest and lock it in place up here if you're riding in a vehicle. So the versatility of this stuff swings a full swing of the pendulum.
Speaking with Greg Foster with DeSantis. All right, Greg, all this talk about the guys like this. What about the ladies? What's DeSantis got to do about the ladies?
We love the ladies, and we try to address that. That's a big market right now for the firearms industry, to the point where DeSantis even has our own, has within our catalog, a ladies section. The most popular, most versatile holsters that the ladies typically wear, the best sellers. We try to show them everything from the purses to the actual holsters to the undergarment type holsters, which are very commonly worn and used now. So we try to address that because that is a major part of the market.
Wow. So let's talk about feedback. You know, you talked about being part of the NRA, the law enforcement division, supporting that. That's awesome. What's the feedback you're hearing from officers around the country?
Well, again, I've been a part of this for quite a few years, 20-some years. And so I know what it means to be out in front of these people. If I've got, let's say I'm going to go into a town and I want to talk to a particular department, I can look on my roster of who was at the police pistol championships and say, hey, Joe, can you get me to see your firearms instructor? And I've never been turned down. That type of ability to come in and talk with people, get the contacts, help support them really is important.
Greg Foster with DeSantis, thanks for what you do, and thanks for being on NRA News.
You are a part of our coverage of SHOT Show 2016 from Las Vegas, Nevada, and we thank you for being here. We've got a fantastic program. Randy Newberg Adventures coming up next hour. Jen Jakes from Bearing Arms in person. Yeah, how about that? And Jared Pierce, Country Star, going to be with us next hour as well. Right now, want to welcome legal scholar and legal star Steve Holbrook to the program. How are you, sir?
I'm great, Cam. It's good to be here at the SHOT Show.
It really is. And, you know, this it does. It just gets bigger and bigger every year. Now, we were talking during the break. This is fascinating. About President Obama's executive actions, right? Supposedly clarifying who needs an FFL and therefore would be required to conduct background checks on gun sales. We keep hearing about the quote-unquote gun show loophole, right? And we're going to shut down the gun show loophole so these gun dealers at gun shows have to go to these private dealers. Mm-hmm. I don't even know what that phrase means. But they would have to conduct background checks. You told me that on the application to become a federal firearms licensee, it actually talks about people who only sell at gun shows, right?
Right.
And what does it say about people who only sell at gun shows?
If you only sell guns at gun shows, fill out this application no further. You will be denied a license. So here, if you go back, first Obama tells the public, people who deal at gun shows have to have licenses.
Yeah.
And Congress won't act, and I'm going to act myself, by golly. And, of course, the Gun Control Act defines what it means to be engaged in the business.
Yes, it does.
And it's a crime not to have a license if you're engaged in the business. And can you imagine if somebody's charged with dealing without a license and the judge gives the jury the instructions and the judge will tell the jury what the law defines engaged in the business means. It means a regular course of conduct over a period of time for livelihood and profit and all that, excluding personal collection, buying and selling. And then the judge would also say, and oh, and President Obama also said to tell you. I mean, this is crazy. And so then they come out with the so-called executive action, and it says you have to have a license if you're engaged in the business, even if it's just at a gun show or on the Internet. Well, hello, that's always been the law. If you're engaged in the business, you need a license. But when you go to the ATF application to get a license, there's a line that says, are you going to be dealing only at gun shows? If so, you don't qualify for a license. Hello. And so what are you to think? Does that mean I can deal at a gun show and not have a license? Well, no, it doesn't mean that. You can't do that if you're meeting the criteria Congress set. That's a federal crime. You can go to prison for 5 years. So what's happened here? All I know is that I hope the president tells ATF they need to take that one statement off the FFL application, because that's directly contrary to what he says the law is supposed to be.
That is fascinating. I mean, I had no idea. I've never applied to be an FFL, so I've never seen the form, but that's really, really interesting.
There's no law that says that you have to... to get a license, you cannot deal only at gun shows. The law says you have to have premises from which you do business. That's fine. That will be your license premises. You know, your shipments of guns could come there. Mm-hmm. And if you sell guns to other FFLs, you can ship them out from there. It means that that's the place where ATF can come and do their inspections, the compliance inspection, look at your inventory, look at the books, make sure everything's correct. That's fine. But ATF tried to say, well, you can only sell guns from your premises. You can't sell them at other places except a gun show. But if you're going to deal only at a gun show, actually sell them only at a gun show, you can't have a license. And they made that up out of thin air.
That is amazing. How long has that been on the application? Do you know?
I don't remember how long on the application, but if you go back to 1968 when the Gun Control Act passed,
okay,
we went through this period in the Carter years. ATF would tell somebody, you don't need a license, so we're going to deny your license. You're not doing enough business. And then, so then the person goes and sells some guns. Then they would bust that person for doing business without a license. And that's what Congress heard from many people in the hearings leading up to the Firearms Owners Protection Act of 1986. And so that defined what it means to be engaged in the business. It doesn't mean that you just made a casual two-time sale at a gun show. It means that it's for livelihood and profit. It's a regular course of conduct, and it excludes buying and selling for your personal collection or liquidating a personal collection. And so where did they ever get this thing about? I think it's always been their policy to deny licenses. In fact, dealers couldn't even sell at gun shows until 1986 when the Firearms Owners Protection Act passed, because ATF interpreted the law to mean you could only sell a gun from your licensed premises.
Really?
Yes.
This is, I'm so fascinated by this, because we've seen, and pardon me, Steve, we've got a special guest who's going to join us here for a minute
right.
or two, if you don't mind.
Yes, sir.
Walking over here, I believe we had the former governor of Texas,
like,
Rick Perry.
Like busting up
That's who it looks like. Governor, I'm Steve Holbrook. Great to see you.
People say that all the time. They say, man, you know, you look like the former governor of Texas.
Yeah,
go,
yes,
yeah,
sir.
I get that. Then I find out whether or not they actually liked him or not.
Yeah.
And then if they did, I just go, that's who I am.
Well, Governor, it's good to see you.
If not, I just go, you know, that guy is kind of...
How are you doing today?
I'm awesome, man. You kidding? Being at the SHOT Show?
How could you not be doing well,
How
right?
can you not be doing good here?
So this next is... question, what are you doing here?
No, the question ought to be, why have you not been here every year in a row for the last 14 years. I mean, why did you miss any?
Right.
This is LaRue Tactical, one of my hometown boys, Leander, Texas. Mark LaRue is a great friend. I'm doing an event this afternoon with them. We're giving a LaRue OBR to the Sniper of the Year, Marine. A young Marine will have a new weapon moving towards their possession as soon as we get to the appropriate place to register it
right.
properly.
Excellent. That is fantastic.
Yeah.
So this is your first time at SHOT Show? No? You've been before?
I've been before.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Well, and it gets bigger and better. I'm here with a friend who came at one of the first SHOT Shows, like, I don't know how long they've been going on. This is like 14 years ago he came to the first one. He said, just in the last two or three years. Now, I don't know. Was it because we got a resident of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue that has created a lot of interest in owning weapons and tactical gear and what have you to defend your freedom and your family? I don't know, but whatever reason.
Might have something to do with it.
It's been good for our country's economy. A lot of people in Texas, my home state, and a lot of people in, some of those even blue states, men and women have really good jobs because they're manufacturing goods that have been innovated right here because of the interaction that happened at the SHOT Show. And so I happen to look at the American defense industry, the American hunting industry, the American home defense industry as a great job creator for America based on our Constitution. Now, what could be better than that?
You know, I can't think of too many things, but the anti-gun advocates, they say maybe we should be making tofu or, close down the gun industry.
I'm looking for tofu in the Constitution. I hadn't found that yet.
I believe it's
I'm
an just, emanation of a penumbra it, or
right.
it's a dangling
yeah,
participle or something.
Maybe
First Amendment freedom.
Yeah.
So, Governor, how concerned are you right now? I mean, we've got Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, Bernie Sanders. They're all saying that, they're trying to out anti-gun each other right now, say this is going to be a huge campaign issue for them. At the same time, look, we've got millions of Americans who are becoming concealed carry holders. I think support for the Second Amendment is strong. Do you think that Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, and the other anti-gun folks, are they misreading the electorate, or are they just hoping to drag us all along
to their
point of view?
I don't know whether they're misreading the electorate or not, but this coming November, the American people need to send a powerful message mm-hmm. to both political parties, frankly. We obviously, I feel very comfortable that the Republican nominee, whoever that individual will be a powerful proponent of the Second Amendment and defending our gun rights. Mm-hmm. But we need to be sending a message across the board that this issue is settled, that this isn't up for debate anymore. I mean, the idea that the Democrats somehow think, or Hillary Clinton, let me put it that way, I don't want to defend, I mean, there's some really good Democrats out there. There's a lot of good Democrats out there mm-hmm. that are supporters of our Second Amendment and our gun rights, mm-hmm. and God bless them for that. I hope they'll take the opportunity this election cycle to realize this may be the most important issue that they face when it comes to our freedoms and our liberties in this country, is defending Americans' right to defend themselves, the families. And Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, Ed Al have made it clear that they'd like for us to be a lot more like Australia mm-hmm. than America.
Yes. Now, and you're absolutely right. I mean, I grew up in Oklahoma. Don't hold it against me. But, growing up, this was a nonpartisan. In fact, in Oklahoma, it wasn't an issue. You had pro-gun Democrats, you had pro-gun Republicans.
Hey, I grew up a Democrat. I was a Democrat until I was 38 years old. I never met a Republican until I was 25 years old.
Yeah, right.
I mean, we hunted them down with dogs in our part of the country. Come on. But the fact is the parties have really changed.
Yep.
I mean, the party that in 1961, when my daddy took me to Sam Rayburn's funeral, mm-hmm. and we stood out on the street just to pay our respects to Speaker Sam, that party's not the party today. The Democrat Party's changed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I can assure you, my granddaddy, my great-granddaddy, if they knew today that the Democrat Party would be going after their right to bear an arm, I mean, they'd turn over in their grave. I mean, so my point with all of this is we're on the right side of this issue. And I think the American people know we're on the right side of it. Democrats like to raise money with it, and all, you know, the tofu eating, you know, folks. I mean, God bless them. I mean, tofu's good. I mean, I don't want to get the tofu crowd upset.
Yeah.
But the fact is, those that think that Second Amendment is somehow another, not exactly what it says it is,
mm-hmm.
they are the ones that are out of step with America. This November, there will be a powerful message sent. I don't think there's a better way to have someone come to the Republican Party than what the Democrats are doing. I think they're driving young people mm-hmm. away from their party with this absolute nonsense that somehow or another you don't have the right to defend your family.
We are unfortunately almost out of time, Governor, but you know, I hope we do get back to a day when the Second Amendment is supported by both major parties and all the major candidates out there. It is fantastic seeing you, sir.
Good to be
Thank
here.
You
Didn't
so
mean
much.
To bust up your interview.
You are welcome anytime.
They showing Houston and other cities a long time
Stick
ago,
around. Hour two of NRA News, Cam and Company, is on the way right after this quick timeout.
Speaking with Larry Pancake and Richard Weathers with Republic Forge. Gentlemen, welcome to NRA News. What's new with Republic Forge?
Well, I tell you, since we talked with you in April, we've introduced a couple of things. We've got out our case-hardened and our blued guns. So we're doing a lot of guns now that with case-hardened frames and blued slides or total case-hardened. We're also still offering all the sub-gauges and sub-calibers, 38 Super, 9mm, 40, 45, 10mm. We've got a new Defiant model. That's an all case hardened gun, this one is, and it's got a full size grip frame with an officer's top. So you've got the full grip frame for a big meaty hand guy like myself, but the smaller officer's model barrel for concealment. And we've also got a new gun that's a stainless slide with integrated RMR. And we're building it mainly for, you know, PPC shooters and IDPA shooters and stuff like that. So it's going to be a stainless gun with a chrome moly frame. And you'll be able to get it with the RMR or T1 or whatever you'd like as far as slide-mounted optics. And so that's a new feature that we've got. Always looking at integrating new things. We're looking at aluminum frame guns right now and alloy frame guns. We've got that in the works. So in the next 12 months or so, you should start seeing some of that. And as always, we're integrating more and more of our manufacturing process into Texas. We started out being, you know, built in our facility in Texas, but a lot of our parts were sourced out of other states from American-made products. Each month, we're integrating more and more. We're going to be, at some point, a Texas-made gun, period. We've got a foundry and a forge that's doing our frames and slides now in Texas. All of our internal parts are still made in the USA. Truly all-American-made gun, just like we have been, but we're trying to get back home to doing everything in the state of Texas. Case Hardened is a very, very pretty... it's a pretty finish. I mean, you've got lots and lots of colors. It's an old school finish. They did it back in the 1800s with charcoal and heat. They do it now with cyanide gas and several other processes. But it's a really pretty, durable finish, like bluing. But each gun is individual. Every time you case harden a gun, the patterns come out different like they do on Damascus. And it's a really striking way to finish a real high-end custom-built gun.
So you're talking an aesthetic advantage, and it really does make for a beautiful firearm.
Absolutely. And the same way with the blue. You know, the blue guns, a lot of people just love the old classic blued gun from the deep dark royal blue that turns purple when it patinas. It's just a classic finish, and they wear well and they're pretty. So we, you know, we had a call for it. People kept saying, man, we'd love to have one of your pistols, but we'd like to have it in a traditional finish. So we answered the call, and we're doing it now.
All right, Larry and Richard, tell us a little bit about Republic Forge. What are you guys all about? How'd you come into existence?
Okay, well, Republic Forge was born out of a group of guys in Texas that wanted to have an all-American-made pistol, a truly all-American-made, every part of it, not just 60% of it, but all of it, made in America. So they got together, and Republic Forge was born. And Republic Forge is American-made right down to the hand tools. The hand tools that we use to build these guns are made in the USA. I mean, people started nitpicking us enough that we even even now have hats and shirts made in the USA because they said, hey, your hats aren't made in the USA.
I can relate to that, by the way, with NRA News hats.
Absolutely. So, you know, it just, why would you not want built in America? I mean, the way the world is today and the things that are going on, American made is the way to go. We want jobs. We want the people to stay American dollars in America. And our company slogan is built by Americans for the Republic.
How do you get more information about Republic Forge and all the products?
You can visit our website at republicforge.com. There's an interactive gun builder on the website where you can actually build your dream 1911. Try colors, try sights, try grips. When you get done and the golden halo appears over it, you look at the bottom right-hand corner. It tells you how much it is. Click the buy it now, and they'll send it to the Republic Forge dealer nearest you.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome back. Hour two of NRA News, Cam and Company. Starts right now from SHOT Show 2016 at the Sands Convention Center, Las Vegas, Nevada. Again, we want to thank our broadcast sponsor, Adcor Defense. Also, want to thank our friends at Nosler for allowing us to be out here today. Randy Newberg is going to join us from Randy Newberg Adventures. Jen Jakes, Bearing Arms, in a couple minutes. Country star Jared Pierce later in the hour. But we were talking with Second Amendment attorney and scholar Steve Holbrook. We had a surprise appearance from Governor Perry, so I appreciate you going with the flow here, Steve.
Oh, yeah, it's a pleasure to see Governor Perry.
It always is. Yeah. But I wanted to keep you around for a couple more minutes because we were talking about President Obama's executive actions. And, you know, you called these executive actions smoke and mirrors
right,
when we were chatting during the break. Is it your opinion that this is... Well, I don't want to tell me why do you call these executive actions smoke and mirrors from the president?
Okay, before he announced the so-called executive action, Congress has enacted it, so I'm going to impose new rules. I'm going to require what the law doesn't require necessarily, because if you assume if Congress didn't act, there must be something they didn't pass, that a law, and therefore I'm going to impose the law. Well, you can't impose a law if you're the executive branch. I mean, you know my book, Gun Control and the Third Reich. Hitler imposed laws the legislature no longer met. Mm-hmm. This is something totalitarian countries do. So, but then when he actually announced his so-called executive action, if you really know what the Gun Control Act says and what the policy is going to be, read between the lines and read the fine print, this is executive non-action. He said, we're going to make people get a license if they're engaged in the business of dealing in firearms. Whoop-de-doo, that's been the law since the Gun Control Act of 1968 passed. And if you meet what the law says to be the criteria for a license, you have to have a license. That, and you go and look, it says regular course of conduct for profit, not just for a hobby, not just working on your personal collection. And so all the hardcore, the people who think Obama is the supreme ruler, they thought he really did something. But I tell you, there's no U.S. attorney in the country who's going to make a prosecution of a case where a person, there's no facts that support being engaged in the business without a license as defined by Congress, mm-hmm. most recently in the Firearms Owners Protection Act of 1986. They're not going to say, well, Obama says this or that, and therefore we're going to prosecute you on some basis that's not written in the law. We're talking about a criminal law, serious felony offense. The president doesn't define that.
You know, what's fascinating about this is we saw a case not long ago out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Young guy used a fake ID to buy 27 handguns and then sold them.
Yeah.
And this was a federal case, and he got probation, Steve. He got probation for this crime.
Yeah.
So you talk about, you know, the president talked about we're going to do everything we can to enforce these laws, keep them on the books. Well, federal weapons prosecutions have gone down. Under the Obama administration. As you say, that is already a crime, what that man did in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. In fact, I believe it's a 10-year federal sentence. And instead, this guy gets away with probation.
Yeah, that's incredible. But the funny thing is, well, it's not funny. Crime of all kinds has been going down,
mm-hmm.
especially violent crime, which we're most glad of that. I suspect other kinds of crimes have gone down with the other, the violent crimes, burglary, all of those things. I suspect that there's fewer people engaged in the business without a license that are committing that crime.
Right.
Now, there's, on the one hand, ATF in its history sometimes has gotten too creative and they would arrest somebody who's really just a collector enhancing their collection. On the other hand, I'll bet you when Obama was making these public statements saying, that we're going to do this or that, I bet you the ATF lawyers were cringing, because they're smart enough to know that here's what the law says, here's what the ATF regulations say, and the president can't just say something and there's going to be a new law or a decree, a non-law.
Well, that's right, and it's important to note that, you know, what the president announced, they we're going to clarify or basically reiterate what the law is. That's not what gun control groups were asking him to do.
Oh, no.
They went 3 years ago and really did want him to redefine what the law was to say if you sold X number of guns per year,
right,
that you were then you were engaged in the business. Now, again, that's not what the statute says, I don't think they could figure out a way to legally do that. But that's what the gun control advocates presented to the president.
Right.
I'm sure that's what they've presented to Hillary Clinton as well. And as you say, all it takes is an executive to say, well, the hell with the Constitution. We'll fight it out in court.
What the anti-gun people would like to do is make it a felony to transfer a gun from a private party to another private party. So-called universal background checks is a smokescreen to do two things. Over-criminalize human conduct, something that's never been a crime in human history, not in American history, I should say. You give a gun to your daughter for Christmas, and you're going to go to prison if you don't have a background check? I don't think so. The whole jurisdictional hook of the federal government into requiring dealer licenses is they're engaged in interstate commerce. Just a private-to-private transaction isn't like that. What are they trying to have a prison inmate explosion? I mean, to try to make so many things a crime, and the whole purpose of that is to repress gun ownership and to register gun owners. It's a smokescreen for registering gun owners because it wouldn't be effective unless you had universal registration. The Everytown, so-called Everytown idiots or whatever the rest of their name is.
The Everytown for gun safety.
Gun safety.
It's not about gun control.
Yeah,
it's gun safety now.
Keep it pointed in a safe direction. Don't put your finger on the trigger until you're ready to shoot. Okay, that's gun safety. The Bloomberg people, they actually said half of the cases that go to jury trial are acquittals of dealing in guns without a license. I don't know whether that's true, but if it is true, that suggests that some of the cases don't have merit if the jurors are saying not guilty. Now, we know that, though, most criminal charges are plea bargain. If somebody really is like the character that you talked about, dealing without a license, bought 25 guns, sold them immediately. They're all the same kind. They're cheap, whatever. They might hit that person with a multi-count indictment. Then he's going to plead guilty to one count, and they're going to go on their merry way. That's what happens with most criminal cases. But if it's really true that half the people charged with dealing without a license are acquitted, that says some abuse is going on. These cases don't have merit.
Steve Hallbrook, Second Amendment attorney. It is always a pleasure to get a chance to talk to him.
Good
glad
to
we
see
could do
you.
It in person today.
Yes, sir. We're usually
we'll
on the phone, so good to be in person and at the SHOT Show. I mean, what an incredible place.
It absolutely is. Enjoy the rest of your week here, and we'll talk to you again very soon.
All right, Cam. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Steve Hallbrook with us here on NRA News, Cam and Company. Coming up next hour, we're going to talk with Mark Chestnut, the editor of America's First Freedom magazine. And Christy Titus is going to join us as well, host of I Am Forever on NRA News, also part of Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation Team Elk on the Outdoor Channel. And right now, sitting down with us, you know her, you love her, she's always on the program, but rarely in person, Jen Jakes of Bearing Arms is with us. How you doing?
I'm really good. I can't tell you how thankful I am to be here and sit down.
You've been doing a lot of walking this morning?
Not so much walking as standing,
okay.
Which I think is actually worse.
Yeah. There are about 55,000 people here, and there are probably about 30,000 chairs, right?
That's being really generous. I mean, really generous.
30? Maybe just down to 30?
Yes.
Okay.
I'll go with that.
Yeah.
But amazing experience. There are so many people that you get to connect with, and a lot of times it's once a year. So I will take standing and talking to people face-to-face over having a chair.
You know, that's the... I mean, there's so much to see. You're never going to see all of the products. And so it's kind of overwhelming to walk around the exhibits. I would say it's not my favorite part because I love getting the chance to see all of the guns, but I'm a people person.
Me too.
And I think that probably is my favorite part of SHOT is getting a chance to reconnect with people that, again, you talk to on the phone all the time, but you never see in person or you see them once a year.
Right.
And the cool thing is that, you know, as this show and as the industry gets bigger, it's I call the NRA annual meeting the world's biggest family reunion.
Right? I agree 1,000%.
This is similar in many ways. It's not a consumer show, so I don't get to see all of my friends. But, you know, it's just fantastic to see all of these supporters, all of the defenders of our right to keep and bear arms who are here, whether it's the retailers, you've got a lot of instructors here. I mean, I'm talking with people throughout the industry, and they are all committed to making sure that these rights, it's not a business.
No.
It's more than a business.
It is a passion. And the perk of it is that we get to sell it and promote it to the American people. But it is a passion. You have to want to get up in the morning and push this stuff and inform people, this is what's out there, this is what's happening, here's what I think about it. And if you don't have that behind it, you have nothing. And a friend of mine asked, you know, what is it like there? It must be so cool there. And I said, you know what? It is American. It is America. It is people who are working so hard to protect our rights and putting good products out there and advancing even women in the firearms industry. I am loving a lot of the new gear, a lot of the new guns. This is the only place where you can really see it, and then we get to go back and write about it and tell everyone else about it. And so it's just a unique experience.
So what are you covering for Bearing Arms while you're here? I know that you and Bob were out. You're laughing.
I'm laughing because Bob's like, so what are you writing? And I'm going,
I'm out, and I'm still gathering information,
right?
Yeah. So, but you and Bob were out at the range, right, for Media Day.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get your fill? Probably not, right?
Not as much as I wanted to, but I was introduced to AR, which I had never shot before. Never. I know, Jen Jakes, I'm telling you. Right? You can look at me funny. It's okay. But I own it. We stopped at Daniel Defense. First stop. The ISR.
Yeah.
I think it's the MK18. Man, is that all. I mean, addicted. Like, I'm
does ISR stand for people who don't know? Integrated suppressed rifle, perhaps?
Fun gun to shoot. That's all I know. Those guys were awesome over there and really just kind of took me through, okay, this one's got a little bit of kick here. Try this one first.
Yeah.
And I worked all the way up. And I posted the video. It was fun. My dad even said, good job, you didn't get rocked. Good job. I'm like, right? Okay. But it's just a really neat experience because I'm still learning in the industry. I do have a voice. But now I can go back to women and say, you know what? It's not as intimidating as you think it is. And it's fun. It is fun. And so I think the more women we have out there talking about these products and experiencing new things, you're going to get more women saying, okay, I can do that.
You know, and it is interesting because I think people have, the media has created an impression about semi-automatic rifles that they are, again, when you've got politicians calling them modern battlefield weapons of war, they're you know, people are apprehensive. They tense up a little bit.
Right.
But then when you actually shoot one, you understand, oh, okay, functionally, this is no different.
It was a kitten.
Right?
It was smooth. It was easy. I was a lot more intimidated by it going into it than at the end of the table with the bigger guns. I'm like, let's go. This is fun. This is really neat. And it wasn't, it really wasn't, I said, this is like a kitten. This is easy. We can do this.
Yeah.
So I can't wait to write about that. And if you noticed, there are a couple booth babes around here. I had said to Cameron Gray and John Pop, John's laughing already, last December, booth babes.
John is our booth babe.
I love John. I got to give him a big smooch when I came down. He is the booth babe.
Did you get consent for that?
I did not.
That was a microaggression, Jen.
It was. I hope nobody got that on film or camera. Don't tweet it. It was a big kiss, wasn't it?
My goodness. Well, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Unless, of course, you broadcast it to the world on NRANews.com.
Sorry, honey. Love you, John. My 12-year anniversary.
Wait. Love you, John.
Oh, and it's John Pop. My husband's name is John Jakes.
I love you, too, by the way.
Thank you. Our anniversary, 12 years, is this Sunday, and we were actually married in Vegas.
Were you really?
We were really.
That is awesome. Well, congratulations.
Intentionally, not just on a whim.
It was just like drunk.
No.
Hey, come here.
Well, I might have been drunk, but it was intentional, I promise.
You came out here with the
intention. We came out here. I came out with my wedding dress, like going. We had an appointment and everything. But then at the last minute, I'm like, that's not really. Let's jeans, t-shirts, let's go. And it was fun. Easy breezy.
Good for you.
I've already
told you my marriage story.
See?
Sneaking into the park, right? Just in, you know?
People spend all this money on these big weddings. They should be buying guns.
They should be. Accessories.
So many more other
things. Right?
Right? Better things to spend your money on.
Exactly.
Right.
Well, that's probably an interview for another time. But I'm glad that you're out here. And at some point, we're going to see your writing. At Barry and Arms about the SHOT Show, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Some point?
You will, I promise. You will. No,
how do you,
I'm
do you like
really
writing
excited.
For Bob? How, you know, because we have Bob on the show, we have you on the show.
Bob is like the big brother that I never had. He is so much fun, and he is just a wealth of knowledge, sometimes useful, sometimes not, but we're a good springboard off of each other. You know, he's the tactical guy, and he's telling me all these things, and I sometimes have to say, Bob, I don't know what the words are that are coming out of your mouth. Slow down.
Right.
I'm not here. I'm here. So I'm learning from him, but that's good because then I'm teaching other people.
But it's, and so I think that's a big part of it, and I think that's, you know, as we're talking about people coming into gun ownership and they're thinking about their rights for the first time maybe in their life,
mm-hmm.
It can be intimidating to start exploring. All of a sudden, you're reading experts and you're reading people for whom this is their life and they've grown up around this, and you're thinking, oh my God, you know, I don't know. It's just I'm gonna back away. What am I getting myself into? So to have somebody who's writing as they're
from that
learning,
perspective.
Right?
So NRA Blog actually contacted me in December, and they were asking me about a feature article. I thought they were asking me to write, and they said, no, we're writing a feature article on you. And I'm going, why me? What? Huh? So they loved my answers so much, I'm a three-part series. So if you go on NRAblog.com, I'm on there, but I talk about the same thing. My father, avid hunter, he taught hunter safety, knows everything about guns. It's intimidating for me to say, I need help with this, and people say, oh, you own AIM Hunting, you know about this, and I have this gun, and what should I do? I actually don't, and I'm just learning, but I'm hoping that women read my writing, women see me on here, and say, wow, she's really learning, and it's okay to not know everything. That's okay, because there are avid shooters and instructors, and there are new gun owners. And I'm staying in my lane. I'm right in between the two. And I like to say that I'm an ambassador to conceal carry,
mm-hmm.
because I'm not the expert. I'm still learning. But I know how it feels to be a brand new gun owner and kind of say, what now?
Right.
What do I do? How do I get started? I don't want to look like a ninny, but I want to stand up. And I think we have so many great women in this industry. We have Jana Waller and Mia Anistein and Jacqueline Kelly. We have so many awesome. Julie Golub, Katie Pavlich. So
Kim
many
Rohde,
women.
Dana Lash right next
Dana
to us.
Dana Lash right next
Boddington.
Door. Exactly.
I mean, you could go on and on.
On and on and on and on and on. But there's something to be said for that middle-of-the-road person who's like, look, I'm with you girls.
Mm.
And I know everyone else, and it is intimidating, but we can do this.
Well,
we can absolutely do this.
Listen, we certainly appreciate your voice and all
Thank
that you.
You
do. It is it's really great to actually see you in person here.
Right.
Come down to Virginia at some point this year, will you?
Twist my arm.
All right, we'll do that.
With bacon.
Come spring, we should have some fresh bacon for you.
Perfect.
All right, Jen Jakes, you can read her at BarryandArms.com. We have to take a quick time out. When we come back here at SHOT Show 2016, the Shooting Hunting Outdoor Trade Show in Las Vegas, Nevada, Randy Newberg of Randy Newberg Adventures on Sportsman Channel will join us. Stick around. We'll be right back right after this.
I'm speaking with Jim Sapieka, director of the NRA Museums. Jim, there's three museums. Let's talk about that third museum you guys have way out west.
That third museum is kind of a little hidden jewel box. It doesn't get the press that the other two bigger museums get, but it's a spectacular little display case. It's the Frank Brownell Museum of the Southwest, and it's at the NRA Whittington Center in Raton, New Mexico. Now, folks who are really shooters will know what the Whittington Center is, but those who may not be that active, it's a spectacular range and hunting complex that is owned and operated by the NRA. There are tens of thousands of acres out there with spectacular ranges where a lot of different championship matches are shot in addition to general recreational and sporting shooting. But they also have the Brownell Museum of the Southwest, and they have some great guns there. Of course, that history of that area is just spectacular, going back to the conquistadors. And they follow the evolution of firearms in that area throughout that multiple century span. They also have firearms that are used in the types of competitions that take place at the Whittington Center. And they recently got a spectacular group of modern engraved firearms. There are masterworks there that I have never seen the likes of before. So if you're in that area, it's a great area for vacationing. There's a lot of attractions in that area. Be sure you don't miss this little jewel box of a museum there.
And how do you get to see all the museums online?
Well, you can. We have several social media platforms. We've got, of course, the website, nramuseums.com. And, of course, we have our Facebook page. You can friend us there and get our Gun of the Day posts. So you can visit us on the Internet, Facebook, get the books. And for sure, come by and see the three museums. They're all open every day of the week, and admission is always free.
Speaking with Marianne Johnson with the NRA Eddie Eagle Gun Safe Program. Marianne, welcome back to NRA News. Tell folks, what is the NRA Eddie Eagle Gun Safe Program?
So the Eddie Eagle Gun Safe Program is a firearm accident prevention education program for pre-K to fourth grade. It's all centered around Eddie's message, if you see a gun, stop, don't touch, run away, tell a grown-up.
Why does NRA do this?
We do it as a way to keep kids safe, get kids thinking about guns. We understand that 47% of American households have firearms in them, so kids need to know what to do when they see them.
And it kind of follows with the NRA's bedrock message of gun safety and how important it is.
Absolutely, and that's why we do what we can and try to prevent as many accidents as possible.
And how does the NRA do it? How does the program work?
So the program, we work mostly with schools, law enforcement, libraries, healthcare providers, and daycares. We provide them with all of the materials that they need to run the program, including instructor guides, animated DVD, workbook stickers, and parents' guides for the kids to take home. So it's very easy to use, very accessible, and we're also able to offer all the material for free thanks to grant funding from the Friends of the NRA.
And there's that cool costume you might be able to get to bring to your school, right?
Absolutely, yes. We do have the mascot costume, which we're currently in the process of updating to go along with our new look that we have. And law enforcement agencies across the country all have costumes and add a whole new element to the presentation. We have a brand new website just for kids. It's eddieeagle.com. It has the video on it, has the Eddie Eagle challenge that kids can take, as well as coloring pages and some sing-along songs as well.
And Marianne, how do people get more information about the program?
The best way is either you can look us up online, eddieeagle.nra.org, or you can send us an email at eddie@nrahq.org.
Marianne Johnson, thanks for what you do, and thanks for being on NRA News.
Yep, thanks for having me.
Welcome back to NRA News, Cam and Company, sponsored by Nosler, our remote broadcast sponsor for SHOT Show, AdCorps Defense. Mark Chesson of America's First Freedom coming up next hour. Christy Titus of I Am Forever. And earlier today, Randy Newberg, host of Randy Newberg Adventures on Sportsman Channel. I had a chance to stop by. It was a fascinating conversation. Take a look and a listen. Here at SHOT Show 2016, and our friend Randy Newberg is with us. How are you, Randy?
I am great, Cam. Thanks for having me.
That is my pleasure.
I love it when I get the invite from you, because it's fun to just sit down and talk about things with a guy like you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. We always love talking with you. You've always got some great stories to tell about where you've been hunting, and here we are. It's the start of 2016. Hunting season is mostly over.
Yeah.
We got spring season starting up again. But tell us about Fresh Tracks and where you guys have gone this past few months.
Yeah, this last year, boy, I mean, we went everywhere. And as most viewers know, we go throughout the West on the public lands. And we're in Alaska, Montana, Colorado, New Mexico, Nevada, Utah. I mean, we got to see a lot of it.
Oh,
Wyoming,
yeah.
And we were chasing bison and elk and black bears and black-tailed deer and mule deer at pronghorn. It's like, I don't know how Randy ended up getting this job, but man, what a gig, huh?
Well, one of the things I really love about your show, first of all, the host. I'm very fond of the host.
But, what do I owe you for that?
Right. You got to take me on a trip at some point. Okay. That's what you owe me. But I love what the show is about because, you know, this is our land.
It is.
And, you know, one of the big complaints that we hear all the time, I hear it in Virginia, where we don't have as much public land to hunt, is you got to know somebody.
Yep.
You got to pay a lease.
Yep.
And, you know, a lot of times that lease is already taken and there's a waiting list. If somebody doesn't want it, you're not going to get it. You know, because there are four or five guys that have been waiting for years to be able to hunt on that piece of property. The fact is, you know, we do have to have access.
Right.
The animals, you know, obviously are the big component. But if you don't have the place to go hunt, you can have all the animals in the world. It still doesn't matter.
You're right. It doesn't. And, you know, here we are at SHOT Show in January 2016, sponsored by the National Shooting Sports Foundation. And they did a study that said the number one reason that people don't hunt as much, why they might quit hunting altogether, or if they come from a hunting background and don't get into hunting, the number one reason is just what you said, access, a place to hunt. And that can be whether you live in Virginia like you do or where I live in Montana. And so the premise of our show tries to be, let's talk about access, places to go hunt. You know, public land is most often the case for us. And I'm an advocate that if we're going to have a future for hunting and a future for conservation, we need to be looking at that horizon of what access is going to look like for those hunters of tomorrow.
So is it getting better or worse, you think?
I think in a lot of ways it's getting better. And some people are going to listen to that and say, wait a second, I just lost my hunting spot. And I know that happens. But the state's agencies, the fish and game agencies are aware of it. They're trying to improve access. At the federal level, the BLM, the Forest Service, they're trying to figure out ways to purchase in-holdings or other stuff that will connect pieces of public land. So I think it's getting slightly better as we go, but there are just so many pressures just with development, with people selling land who maybe are not of our, you know, our background.
Right.
So they don't want anyone on their land. They don't want any hunting. So those kind of challenges are ahead of us, but I think a lot of people are putting their collective minds together to try to figure out how do we solve this.
You know, you mentioned BLM land, and this is sort of one of those issues right now we're seeing out west. You've got a number of states saying, hey, we want to control that land.
Right.
Is that an issue that directly impacts hunters, or is that something that hunters are aware of, but at the end of the day, whether it's federal land or state-run land, it's still an issue of the public being able to access that?
Right. It is. And as you know, in my other life, I'm a CPA, so I get to disinherit the federal treasury on a daily basis. So I'm not much.
You're an American hero,
right? Randy. I'm not much of a big government guy. So, but I'm also an access and hunting guy. And when I first heard about the states taking over the federal lands, my intuitive gut instinct was that's a great idea. And then I started looking at how states have different laws about access to their state lands versus what we currently enjoy on Forest Service or BLM. And I'll use an example of Colorado.
Okay.
Colorado hosts more non-resident hunters than any state in the country. They have 23 million acres of BLM land and Forest Service land. But their state land rules say if the state land board owns this land, you are not allowed to hunt it.
Oh, really?
Right. And so when I start thinking about that, I'm like, how would we replace 23 million acres of hunting access in Colorado if the state land board took over those lands?
Right.
New Mexico, you cannot camp on state lands. Wyoming, you cannot camp on state lands. And a lot of the places I hunt and a lot of people hunt, we go and set up our elk camp on the BLM or the Forest Service. That's what we camp and hunt from.
Okay.
And so as long as the state rules currently are what they are, what sounds really good on the surface to a lot of people, when you roll back the covers, is like, I better rethink this. So that movement, those pressures, I think need a lot more discussion and sorting out. Because I think a lot of people's instinct of this would be an improvement if you're a hunter.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, the way the rules are, it would hurt access.
That's really, really interesting. And I had no idea that a lot of these states have those
quirky
policies.
Right. Each state has a different rule, and the state a lot of the western states were granted state lands as part of statehood to fund their school systems. Mm-hmm. And so they're held, they usually call themselves the state land board. And they're constitutionally required to make money on those lands to fund the school system. Great idea. I get that. But if now all of a sudden all these federal lands became state lands, it would undergo a whole different sort of management.
Interesting.
Because of that.
So, that is really, really interesting.
Yeah. And I didn't know it until 10 years ago when I really started looking into this. So we're here in Nevada, right?
Mm-hmm.
I went to college in Reno. Graduated. They must have wanted to get rid of me, so they gave me a diploma. But in Nevada, when they, at their statehood, they were granted 2.1 million acres of state land. They've since sold all but 30,000 of those acres.
Okay.
So that's over 2 million acres that, that hunters used to have access to in Nevada that we don't anymore. And so another thing that causes some concerns in the hunting community is that states, by their design, by their constitutional charge of what they're supposed to do with these state land boards, are very good at selling lands, which, again, if we're disposing lands,
right,
that doesn't solve the access issue. So
it seems like this is going to be an issue that's going to be around. I mean, you said you've been looking at this for 10 years. It sounds like this is going to be around for another 10 years.
It's going to be here for a while. So
wow.
It's just one of those challenges out there, and I think we as hunters, the more informed we are, the better we can advocate for our cause. So.
Absolutely. And you know, and at the state level, is it a matter of getting those policies changed to get in front of the lawmakers and explain, you know, listen, here's what we're losing.
Right.
And we want to make sure that we don't lose that.
Right.
No matter who's managing the land, we've got to make sure that there's access for hunters.
Right. And in Montana, when I moved there in 1991, I think it was 1995, we went to the state legislature. We were like Colorado. You couldn't hunt state trust lands, the little blue squares on your map. So we went to the legislature and said, look, we want to pay a fee so that we'll pay an annual fee. Everyone pays, I think, $10 for the pass.
Okay.
And that goes into the school fund system.
Right.
And so it was a win-win for everybody now. So you can get those state laws changed that would maybe make the discussion a little more different from an access point.
But yeah.
That was a very difficult legislative battle. I go to our capital in Helena, and I still get some people who give me the stink eye. Like, I remember that guy. He
really
wanted that law changed.
What was the? I'm curious. What was the opposition to this?
The opposition came from the existing leaseholders.
Okay.
Who said, "Look, we don't want the public on this land, or we don't want them accessing this land, and then they can access some BLM and some federal land behind it." And they thought this. And part of it is just inertia, right?
Right.
This is how it's always been. What? Get out of our hair. Quit it. I don't care if you guys are willing to pay. So it just, you know, it's the normal dynamic of anytime you try to change a policy at a state or governmental level. So.
See, this is why I love talking with you. I always learn something whenever I have you on the program, Randy. Yeah. I really appreciate you spending some time with us. All right, so when are you on? When can folks watch your program?
Yeah, people can always watch us. We're one of those shows that are on quarters three and quarter four. So July, the TV show starts firing up on Sportsman's Channel. In the interim, they can download our content to their mobile devices, computers, whatever. Watch all of our past seasons on randynewberg.com.
Okay.
They can follow us on our big talk forum we have called hunttalk.com. Or we just turned on the lights on a new YouTube channel, and it's called Randy Newberg Hunter. And we just turned it on January 1st. And already people are going out there. I'm like, how do these people find a chucklehead like Randy Newberg out on the internet when I'm not even telling them about it? So.
That is awesome. They're looking for you. They're Googling you.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's a scary thought, right?
It is. Are those enemies looking for me or are those friends? But
well, listen, you keep doing what you're doing.
You too, Cam.
And it is always a pleasure. You've got a microphone whenever you want, Randy.
Thank you so much. And I hope that one of these times these microphones are on and we'll do it out from the duck blind or something.
Let's try to make that happen. Hey, thanks so much for stopping
Cam.
By.
Thanks, Cam. Have a great show.
You too, sir. Randy Newberg joining us here on NRA News, Cam and Company. And back with you here live at SHOT Show 2016. Still to come on the program this afternoon, Jared Pierce is going to be with us. Also, a Mark Chestnut of America's First Freedom. We're going to hear actually from John Pop. John talked with Kellyanne Pigeon of Armed and Feminine. And also Christy Titus, I Am Forever on NRA News, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, Team Elk on Outdoor Channel. They are putting together a new social media campaign promoting hunting. It's called Hunting is Conservation, which, you know, look, if you're a hunter, you probably already are aware of this, but many Americans are not. You know, we see the attacks on hunters from people who say, why do you want to kill these animals? Why do you just want to kill these animals? Well, you know and I know that responsible game management requires hunting in order to maintain and grow a healthy population of animals. So they've got this. This is from the SHOT Show Daily here. The front line of conservation. So they're going to be using research provided by Congressional Sportsman's Foundation, the NSSF, Responsive Management, Southwick Associates, talking about 25 reasons why hunting is conservation. Again, we'll talk with Christy Titus about that coming up in Hour 3. We've got the deal of the day. We've got the hero of the day and our good guy of the day still to come. So stick around because we have a lot more NRA News, Cam and Company, live from SHOT Show 2016 coming up right after this.
Here at the NRA annual meetings with the women behind Girls with Guns, it is Narissa Harmon, Jen Adams. Good to see you, ladies.
Great. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
You know, seriously, you guys, if there was an NRA annual meetings fashion show, you guys would win. You guys are always so stylish. I mean, all your products aside, you're always just like, you bring it. You really bring it.
Oh, thanks for that. You know, Narissa and I each have our own unique style.
Yeah.
I bring a little bit of redneck to the scene. I love my boots and my belt buckle. Yes. And Narissa's the fashionista.
I like to change it up. Lots of jewelry, yeah. GWG, a little acid wash, and headbands. That's my style.
Yeah, and behind us, you have headbands, too, for sale. What is the deal with GWG and headbands?
I don't know. I kind of think it's like the trend right now. I love headbands. So if I'm going to wear them, I want our GWG girls to wear them as well. And, you know, it's fun to design them and create them and to see the girls wearing them. So
very cool. What is it? You know, we're talking throughout the show about the fact that, you know, women and shooting, women and guns has become so big. It's almost to the point where you don't even need girls with guns anymore because now it's just people with guns. And, of course, you have your own separate products. But, you know, women shooting as a separate entity, is almost everything is just people. It's just people shooting now.
Absolutely. But the fun thing about Girls with Guns is that we get to wear our brand and our passion on our chest, on our headbands, yes, on our footwear, yes, and that's where it comes, and that's where I think so many women do love our brand and are so passionate about it these days.
Yeah. And all the new shooters, too, you know, they pick up a shirt or a hat. They just started shooting. They can't wait to tag us in it on Facebook. And to see them and to hear them, you know, tell us those stories, it's pretty fun and special for us, for sure.
You know, on the other side of the aisle, there's people like Moms Demand, who Girls with Guns is just completely, they don't want to talk about that. They don't want to hear about that. When you deal with that side of the issue and they say to you, why do you have a business that promotes women and guns, women and shooting, what do you say to them?
You know, one of the things that we're all about is also partnering and helping gain awareness for, you know, what I say, proper gun control, learning how to use a firearm properly, and going to the range. Today, while we were at the Ladies Range Day that Morgan Mills put on, you know, we had shooters, people who had no experience, and we're able to tell them exactly how to use a firearm and how to do it properly. So that's what we're about, and that's what our brand stands for. And, you know, we're trying to work hard to really just bring awareness to that.
You also have the TV show Universal Huntress. By the way, Huntress is one of the coolest words ever. Talk about the TV show.
The TV show is Monday nights on the Sportsman's Channel, 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Narissa and I are two best friends. You know, we started this company in our garage, and our goal is to promote our clothing line and enjoy each other's on this journey. We get to do crazy things like jumping out of airplanes. Last week, we were in Argentina, and I had a boina, which is a beret in Argentine, and we were riding horseback, gathering cattle. Then we're hunting free-range red stag, and the journey is what it's all about. We have enjoyed it, and we really want to pass that on to our audience, while also educating them about different areas of the world and hunting.
We also ate some amazing food, which is my favorite thing to do. Every time we leave the country, I always talk about the food. So for me, that was really fun. And then the people, the culture. So I loved it. I love it. I can't wait to our next trip.
That's awesome. You guys spent a lot of time together in business and in TV. And what is your favorite memory together?
Wow. Favorite memory together.
I can't even just have one memory. There's so many.
Possible.
This last year was such a whirlwind, and we shared so many special moments out in the field and being able to wake up and watch a sunrise and a sunset and watch the stars and just be out in nature together and to share these crazy experiences has been pretty amazing.
So every time we leave a country, an outfitter, we always cry.
You really?
And I know they always look at us, but they've become family with us, too. Aww. And we leave not only with new friends, but with family in another country. Yeah. And Narissa and I, you can't even say there's a number one because the people have been so... The people are probably my favorite part.
Yeah.
Obviously, I love hunting, and that is my passion. But the people along the way have made this journey amazing.
That's what it's really all about. I think that's why when we're out in the field together, whether it's with our girlfriends or new outfitters or a new country, you know, we get together and those are special moments that we'll cherish forever. So
that's awesome. Well, you guys have a lot going on. Where should people go online to find your stuff, buy your stuff and see the show, et cetera, et cetera?
GWGclothing.com and find retailers, sporting goods stores all over the United States.
Welcome back to NRA News, Cam and Company. Sponsored by Nosler, our broadcast sponsor, as we come to you remotely this week from Las Vegas, Nevada, is also our AdCorps Defense. I'm going to actually head down into the exhibit halls. I've not had a chance to look around at all yet, but I'm going to head down right after we get off the air here, and I'm going to go visit our friends at AdCorps and our friends at Nosler, and I'm going to hopefully get a chance to see a couple of other items as well. But since I have not actually been inside the exhibit halls, I wanted to bring somebody on who has spent some time inside the exhibit halls here at SHOT Show. Our friend Steve Gutowski of the Washington Free Beacon is with us. How are you, man?
I'm doing good. This is my first SHOT Show, so I'm pretty excited.
What do you think, in a word?
Massive, I guess, would be the first thing that comes to mind. It's like 65,000 people, from what I've been told. This is the biggest event I've ever been to.
We were talking yesterday, and you said, like, this is so much bigger than CPAC, right?
Oh, yeah. That's what I expected. I was like, oh, it'll be like CPAC, but it'll be guns, and that'll be cool. But this is like 10 times bigger than CPAC. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's amazing. And it is kind of overwhelming. You know, I think somebody said that if you wanted to see every booth, you would have to start, like, the minute the doors open on Tuesday, and you would have 22 seconds to spend at every booth.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, again, it's not going to happen. Did you get a chance to go out to Media Day?
I didn't this range? Year. Because I registered. So this thing, it's so massive, you have to register, like, a year in advance.
Right?
I'm at a hotel that's, like, 20 minutes away.
You're in Arizona.
Everything's booked. It's like a whole world of its own, basically.
It really is. So what have you had a chance to take a look at? Has anything caught your eye?
You know, one of the coolest things that I've seen so far is the new products display. They have a whole section of just brand-new products. And some of the things in there, the craftsmanship that goes into it, the unique designs of they're taking the AR platform and like I've seen and ARs that are like skeletonized all the way through the entire rifle in ways that I'm like, how does this even function as a gun? Just all these brand new designs, these cool things. There's a computer that you strapped that you put on a Picatinny rail for a handgun that analyzes your shots, and it can tell you if you're pulling or pushing or anticipating recoil.
Oh, cool.
There's there's all kinds of amazing things. There's a bullpup dual-barrel shotgun that looks incredible. I've seen all sorts of incredible innovative designs that you just can't see them anywhere else because here it's like there's 10,000 gun companies, and they're all doing something really interesting.
Right.
I saw... one company that's very heavy into custom Cerakoting all their guns, so with really intricate designs that look like Stormtrooper inspired designs for ARs, Tommy gun inspired AR design with wood foregrip.
Oh wow!
Just amazing, incredible stuff. You can't see it anywhere else.
Because you are a builder, right? I mean, you built your own AR.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's kind of interesting because we've got, within the gun-owning community, you've got people who have absolutely no interest in doing anything like that. They don't want to reload, right? But then you've got the DIY aside as well, and the men and women who love to make stuff and they love to create stuff, and a lot of folks with an engineering bent or a mathematical bent really like firearms, really like shooting, because they like the process of actually taking something from nothing and turning it into a firearm.
Oh yeah, and for me, I enjoy working with my hands. You know, my dad's a carpenter, so I think I get a lot of that from him. And so, firearms, especially the AR platform, because it's so simple, you need so few tools to really even just build a whole AR from parts.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that really is a lot of fun to me. You know, because I enjoy working with my hands and being able to build something from nothing. And it's not, you don't have to have a ton of expertise to do it either. It's
right.
Something you can do as a hobby. It's actually a lot like building computers, weirdly enough.
I can see the similarities
parts
there.
And you assemble them all together. It's a very similar sort of process.
All right. Well, if I end up building my own, I'm going to ask you for some help. Will you assist?
Absolutely. I'd love to. That's awesome.
Hey, brother, listen, I appreciate you coming on the program. It's fantastic seeing you out here. I'm glad that you're enjoying your first SHOT Show. And we'll have to catch up next week, maybe have you on the show, get some more thoughts after you've had a chance to process and digest all of this.
Absolutely. If I ever make it back to D.C., there's big snowstorms coming.
I can pack you in my bags if you want. We'll see what we can do. Steve Gutowski of the Washington Free Beacon with us here on NRA News Cam and Company. Thanks again, sir. And still to come on the program, we've got Jared Pierce, who's going to join us in just a minute. He's got a single and a video coming out called Home. And, you know, speaking of first SHOT Shows, I think this might be Jared's very first SHOT Show. We'll also talk with Mark Chestnut, Christy Titus coming up next hour. And right now, I do want to welcome to the program country star Jared Pierce is with us. How are you, sir?
Hey, man, doing good. How are you?
I'm good. See you. Thanks for spending some time with us today.
Yeah, glad to be here.
So is this your first SHOT Show?
This is my first one. Is this not crazy? This is wild.
It's amazing,
man.
Isn't it?
I come up the escalator and I got lost. I was like, man, where am I supposed to go? No, it's cool, man. We're excited about being here. It's awesome.
So what brings you out of here, Jared?
Well, you know, just like any other Southern boy, I'm a hunter. So I love this kind of atmosphere. This is what I'm always looking for, you know. Look at the new brands, the guns, different things, which my music, actually, some of it ties into the fishing hunting world. So, hey, I'm always looking for those people who are willing to partnership.
Right. So, yeah. And so are you out here with Shoot for a Cure?
I am, yeah, Shoot for a Cure. These guys have been great to me. I travel around with them, do some clay shoots from time to time. They come to Nashville, and we actually did a shoot. So, you know, we actually last year, those guys did such a great job. I think they put on 17 events just all over the United States.
So, that's amazing.
Yeah. Mark Gallardi, those guys have been just amazing. So,
they're good folks.
Good folks.
So you say, I kind of picked up on the accent just a little bit.
That's
a Boston accent, right? That's up there in New England.
No, that's deep south, man.
Where did you grow up, Jared?
Man, I grew up probably 30 minutes south of Muscle Shoals, Alabama.
No kidding.
Yeah, man, Alabama, roll tide. Got to throw that in there. They did good this year.
They did. Better than my Oklahoma State Cowboys. It kind of faded there at the end of the season. But let's not talk football because that's kind of a painful thing to discuss. When did you know that you wanted to get into music?
Well, you know, I grew up, my family was just rooted in the music. A lot of it was the Christian music. My mother was in a Christian gospel group, and she sang. So I was around it all the time, you know.
Growing up near Muscle Shoals.
Yeah, I mean, you're there. You're right in the middle of it. So, you know, I think when I was 8 years old, my mother gave me my first guitar. And she showed me three chords on the guitar, gave me a poster, and from there, man, that poster, I taught myself how to play. When I was 15 years old, we started a band. And we traveled going all around the north corner of Alabama, just playing different areas, fairs, festivals. And kind of when we got in college, we kind of all split, you know, too much going on. Really, we couldn't stay together. So I started a solo act and started traveling around doing acoustic shows and actually traveling back and forth to Nashville, writing, and wrote some cool songs with some guys. Actually put it on a demo, started sending it out. Got some hits back. Now I live in Nashville. Man, just living the dream. It's awesome.
That is awesome. Well, tell me about the single you've got coming out, Home, right?
Home, yes. We're excited. When I heard this song actually played in the studio by these studio musicians, I almost brought a tear to my eyes. Like, wow. Because I was so proud of this song. It's a song that I actually sit on my porch and wrote at my hometown. And when I carried it into the studio and showed the guys, they were all just like, wow, dude. I was actually reluctant about cutting it because I'm hard on myself, you know, a little bit. So I wanted to really tweak it and get it right. And they said, hey, this song's ready. So we cut the song, turned out great. And so many people like it that we have decided that, hey, this is going to be the next single. We're going to release this next. So we're thinking probably spring. We're going to release Home, do a video. We're going to shoot a video. That's going to be cool.
That's awesome.
We're
going
to tie it in.
Is that going to be your first video?
That's the second.
Second.
Our first single was released back in June. It's going down, and we've got the video on YouTube. It was just a cool, fun song, and this is going to be the second song. Going to release the video along with the song. And I think what we're talking about doing for the video is actually tying in the military some way. I'm a big military man. I always carry the tags. This is my father and my grandfather was both in the military. And my mother's daddy, he recently passed away probably 2 years ago, and he was in the Navy. So I'm very, very, I'm just proud of what those people do out there for our country, you know.
So. You know, those of us who, and I've never worn the uniform, but I'm with you. My dad was in World War II, Navy vet. Grandfather was actually in the Canadian Cavalry during World War I. And, you know, I mean, and living in the D.C. area for a number of years, we lived in a neighborhood with a lot of military families. And this was, you know, 2004. So, you know, we had friends going over to Iraq and Afghanistan, multiple deployments. And you really understand. I think in a way it's very easy to forget, right? If you don't live near a military base, if you don't live near where active duty warriors are living, it's easy to forget how many men and women are out there.
Exactly.
And their families who are, again, the families are a big part of it. You know, they're making sacrifices right along with those who are on active duty.
It's a huge sacrifice. You know, I have my wife's stepsister. She's deployed, and she's, I can't remember, I think Qatar, and she's always gone. And, you know, the family's really, you feel that as a family member because, you know, you get together at the holidays and somebody's not there. It's just, it's hard for the families. And a lot of people do forget that, man. It's important that we as Americans, we back our military. So, you know, that's one reason I want to tie this in with that because it's just a great song and it fits that. So.
Well, that's awesome, man.
Yeah,
that's fantastic.
Looking forward to it.
I'm looking forward to seeing the video this spring.
Yes, sir.
Are you
going to
be out on tour this year?
Yes, we are right now. We're kind of, we are doing some things as far as tour, but it's mostly just here and there because we're trying to get the album. We're actually going to finish the album. We've got 6 songs on the EP. We've got 5 more we're going to add to the album. So we got to go back in and record.
Okay.
Plus, we're actually talking about maybe doing some acoustic songs on a demo and putting it out because, hey, I've got a few songs that I didn't choose to put on the album that are pretty good. So, you know, we kind of want to get those out to our crowd and listeners, too. So.
You got to fit in some time for some hunting and fishing. And,
oh, yeah, always, man. Can't leave that out, which turkey season's coming up. So I'll be in the woods for
that's
sure.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Well, listen, hopefully, you know, coming up in May, we've got the NRA annual meeting in Louisville, Kentucky, not too far from Nashville. And
yeah.
Love to see you out there
if
your
there.
Schedule works, man.
Hey, I hope so, man. If we fit in, we'll be there.
All sure. right, bring your guitar, and we'll have you on stage.
Hey, I'd love to.
And you can play Home for us.
That'd be great, man. Sounds great.
Awesome. Jared, thank you so much. Where can
Thanks,
we find
Ken.
More about you and your songs? And
the best place to go is my website, www.jaredpierce.com.
Okay.
Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, I'm all over that. Just, hey, look me up on most of everything I got is online anywhere. I mean, our stuff, you can find it at iTunes, Google Play, Amazon. It's all over the Internet. So,
yeah, that's
awesome. We're using that computer pretty heavy.
Good for you, man. Listen, I hope that 2016 is a fantastic year for you.
Thank you so much
for coming on the show.
Yes,
and,
sir.
Look forward to talking to you again.
Hey, look forward to it, buddy. Thanks for everything.
Thank you, sir. Good to see you. Jared Pierce joining us right here on NRA News. Cam and Company, again, the single coming out called Home. And by the way, at Jared's website, he actually has a hunting blog as well. So it's J-A-R-R-E-D. PIERCE.com, JaredPierce.com. Now, coming up top of the hour, Mr. Mark Chestnut of America's First Freedom. Also, Kellyanne Pigeon of Armed and Feminine. Talking with John Pop and Christy Titus of I Am Forever. Tomorrow, by the way, again, all week long, we've got coverage from SHOT Show for you. Tomorrow, Jana Waller, Mr. Pigman. Yeah. Pigman. I got an email, by the way. I didn't tell you this, John. I got a an email from one of Pigman's friends who said, I'm not even sure what this is all about. It just said four words. Virtual reality Pigman experience. I don't even know what that means, but we're going to find out tomorrow.
Oh, my.
Can you imagine?
Oh, boy.
Strapping on the Oculus Rift or whatever, and all of a sudden you are entering the world of Pigman. Like, you know, remember that movie Bean John Malkovich?
Yep.
Bean Brian Pigman Quokka. How about that?
That might be too much.
Right? J.R. Salzman, Rob Pink is going to join us on the program tomorrow. It's really, it's going to be a fantastic show throughout the rest of the week. We're going to be bringing you a coverage from SHOT Show 2016. Coming up top of the hour, we're going to have the deal of the day, hero of the day, and our good guy of the day. We're also looking at some of the day's top stories. You know, a lot of legislatures are coming back in session. So we've got in West Virginia permitless carry legislation that has been introduced. I'm a little jealous, John. I'm a little jealous. West Virginia might become freer than Virginia here before long. In New Hampshire, on the other side of the gun-related coin here, we've got a House committee that is hearing legislation that would require liability insurance to own a firearm in the live, free, or die state. Can you believe that? Tomorrow, January 21st, in the House Commerce and Consumer Affairs Committee, in the Legislative Office Building, is room 302 if you're a New Hampshire resident. House Bill 1368, sponsored by State Rep. Catherine Rogers, would require the seller, purchaser, and owner of a firearm to be covered by a liability insurance policy. Yeah. Kind of seems to me like we're imposing a lot of conditions on gun ownership. And by the way, conditions that will not be followed by criminals, right? Those who buy their guns illegally, I can't imagine they're going to be picking up a liability insurance policy to go with their illegally acquired firearm. Can you? All right, stick around. Hour 3 of NRA News, Cam and Company, sponsored by Nosler and our remote broadcast sponsor, Agcor Defense. Comes up right after this quick timeout.
Here in Nashville, Tennessee, NRA annual meetings. It's Dan Quall from NRA Hearing Benefits. Dan, this would be a good place today because the wall of guns is over there. It's really loud. So hearing benefits is very important right now.
Absolutely. I mean, we're here doing a couple of three things. Number one, ear protection. So we are promoting that. And this wall of guns reminds us that we have to protect what the hearing that we have. So it's very important to do that. So
we, of course, NRA members and the NRA, it's all about safety and respecting the firearm. But it seems to me, you know, when we talk about eyes and ears, people sometimes can be forgetful. And when you look at some of the statistics and the data of the decibels that come out and can damage your ear, I mean, talk about what you see.
Well, the studies are really clear. I mean, the sound level that's produced from a gunshot, even in an open environment, is going to create some damage. It's just the impact noise is that significant. And you do it repeatedly, and you're going to have what we call permanent sensory neural or nerve damage. Now, what that means is some of the hair follicles in the inner ear have been damaged. And so then what we have to do is we have to look at some way to try to compensate that. So two things that usually are the indicators. Number one is ringing in the ears. We start to get the what we call tinnitus. And so that's an indicator and usually a sign, need to get your ears tested, let's see what's going on. And then the other aspect is just what we call just flat-out nerve damage, sensory neural damage. And so where people can hear, but they don't understand the words. So they think, I hear fine, but sometimes it sounds like people are mumbling, or when I get around a lot of noise, I can't understand. And that's a sign of a high-frequency hearing loss and very typical of shooting. And, in fact, that's where I got mine, shooting and running boats. And so now here I am, an audiologist, and I forget about putting the protection on, and now here I am wearing devices.
Do you have any clients?
Surprisingly. And surprisingly, they relate. Once I show them, they realize that, hey, you didn't do the things you should have done either.
So NRA hearing benefits, what exactly does that provide?
Well, you know, the NRA is so good to its members. It takes its membership, and it goes out and uses it to leverage and create savings for them. And so Starkey Hearing Technologies started working with the NRA many years ago to provide discounts for NRA members to save money on buying a hearing aid. So when you come through us, you can expect to save anywhere from 25 to 40% on the cost of hearing aids out in the marketplace. And that's all thanks to the NRA and what they've, you know, gone to bat for the folks, you know, all their members. And so it's a really great benefit. And hearing aids today are so much different from what they were even 5 years ago. Yeah. Our president gave us a talk the other day. The computing power in a hearing aid that I'm wearing right now, it has more computing power than the computers they used to land a man on the moon. And now we've got it at the size that it fits over the top of our ears. So we can manipulate sounds, help control background noise, link directly into your phone. I can stream right from my phone into my hearing aids. I don't have to hold it up to my ear. And so just amazing technology. 1 out of 10 people in the U.S. has a hearing loss. And of that group, less than 10% will be a surgical or medical. So about 90% are going to require some kind of amplification correction.
So a lot of people that could benefit from this, where should they go online?
NRAHearingBenefits.com. Or go to the NRA site, and we're listed on there too. But if you remember Hearing Benefits, NRAHearingBenefits.com, you'll find us. And we have what are called hearing care advisors that are on the phone to help guide a person through the whole process of getting tested and seeing if a hearing aid makes sense for them. So
sounds great. Thank you very much, Dan.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Welcome back to NRA News. Cam and Company, sponsored by our friends at Nosler, and our SHOT Show 2016 coverage sponsored by our friends at Adcore Defense. Coming up on the program this hour, Mr. Mark Chestnut of America's First Freedom, our friend and producer, John Pop, talking with Kellyanne Pigeon of Armed and Feminine, and Christy Titus, host of I Am Forever and part of Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation's Team Elk on Outdoor Channel. And right now, I want to welcome to the program our friend Natalie Foster. How are you?
Hey, Cam. I'm great. I'm so glad to see you guys. I'm so glad to be back here at SHOT Show 2016.
I know. It's good to see you, too. And I actually ran into you Monday.
Yes.
Out at the range.
At Media Day.
And it was pretty early on in the day, so I don't even think you had shot anything yet.
No, I hadn't. I just arrived. So it was a great time, as it always is. We had so much fun and got to shoot a variety of really interesting products and just experience, because it's not just guns, right? I mean, they have the Nissan Titan, and then they have a lot of different products that are really fascinating. And I enjoy the firearms, but then the accessories too are really cool. And I swear every year it's just more, and it makes things more and more comfortable, especially for women to shoot, which is always great, because the more comfortable women are shooting, the more they're going to do it, right? So that's great. And it was really nice to see so many innovative manufacturers out there doing that.
And you're right, it was more than guns. In fact, producer Cameron Gray had a chance to go off-road driving for the first time in his life. They had a Dodge Ram.
We're all clapping back behind
right?
the cameras.
They had a Dodge Ram out there, and they were doing the off-road driving. I missed it somehow, but I was taking pictures of all of the different Rams that they had, because my wife, that's what she drives. And so I'm like, hey, look, I found your new truck.
Yep.
Found your new truck. It was really cool.
I love
cool.
that she drives a truck. My mom just bought a truck. So I'm like, I love these women who have these awesome trucks.
Right? And then I'm taking that. I'm like, look, this is your new gun. Look, this is your new gun, too. I mean, it was so much to see and shoot. And it was amazing. And then you come here. And again, I mean, it's a small American city.
It is a city.
That
That's
has
what
set
I keep
up
saying.
In the Sands Convention
Center. I know, and it's so cool. When I got here, you know, I've been kind of out for a little while, because, you know, I was pregnant and had a kiddo this
yes.
year, so it's a big development. But it's so nice to be back in it and be in this little city, because these people, just walking on the show floor, it was like a huge breath of fresh air, and I love these people, you know? And it is a really diverse group. I mean, you've got, you know, obviously MySpace, which is very, like, you know, female-centric, and you're looking at concealed carry purses and such, but then you've got the tack world and the hunting world and law enforcement, and it's just so fascinating to see everybody come together, you know, and really support the Second Amendment, be a part of this amazing community, and it really is diverse.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
It is. So I've got to ask, you became a mom.
Yes, I did.
And you did not throw away all of your guns.
Oh. Are you kidding?
You did not join Mom's Demand Action.
I did not join Mom's Demand Action.
You're still Second Amendment friendly.
Yes, sir.
Right?
Oh, man. You know, if anything, and what I'm seeing, too, from moms who already understand the Second Amendment and appreciate their gun rights is that it's the opposite. You go full mama bear mode.
Right.
And you just want to take care of this child. There's nothing, you know, more important in this world than this person and who's so vulnerable, you know. And obviously you want to secure and protect it, protect your firearms, you know, make sure that, I don't know, that's been a big thing for me. That's the products that I'm really looking for this SHOT Show that I'm really excited about are the things that you know, you can have quick, easy access to your firearms, but they're always secured and out of little hands. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of my MO this time is looking. And I'm seeing so many of my readers at Girls Guide to Guns are, you know, they are kind of in this evolution, this journey with me, you know, going from single to married to now having kids. And it is, you know, it's a really interesting journey, and it's fun to progress along with my audience. So yeah, that's what we're looking for.
Well, congratulations. You know, my friend Jim Garrett and I wrote a book last year called Heavy Lifting, Grow Up, Get a Job, Start a Family,
yes,
Another Manly
so
Advice.
So proud of that.
But I am glad to see that. I mean, that we're basically, you know, you've done that. You've grown up. You've got a great job.
I feel like I've grown up with you guys.
I feel like that too, right?
You've been so great to me, but I do. I feel like it's such a family.
And it's awesome to see this. I'm glad that motherhood is treating you well.
Yeah,
and
I'm loving it.
Are you getting sleep?
You know, he is a good sleeper. I'm very, very grateful for that.
Wow.
He's a good sleeper,
congratulations.
Good eater. He's a big boy. So, yeah, grateful for all of that. And pregnancy was not fun, but I told my family I will do it at least one more time because he needs a brother or sister. But I've so enjoyed having him and just bring him into this world and, you know, training him up to be. I mean, I named him Hunter, you know. So, so this child is like, you know, he's got an identity built in.
Right.
And it is part of this community.
Are you so, you know, I mean, really, you could have more kids, and each one could just have,
the next one is named Reagan.
You've already named him.
I don't care, boy or girl. We're having
really?
A Reagan. Oh, yeah. Just so everyone knows.
Hunter and Reagan.
Yeah, Hunter and Reagan.
I love it. I love it. So you're still doing the website,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Girls Guide to Guns. I have taken a break. I've kind of given myself maternity leave.
Okay.
But, yeah, we're back in action here at SHOT Show. And, yeah, doing that. And then, of course, I've got a firearms line with Devil Dog Arms. It's kind of a newer firearms company out of Illinois. So it's like the solidarity with California and Illinois. We got to hold the line for our firearms rights. So anyway, and then, of course, I'm working with Duracoat. They've got my line of gun paint, so just customizing. And then I have actually been working, it's almost finished, been working on a children's book for kiddos about gun safety. And it's a poem, and I'm really, really excited about that. And we'll be launching it at NRA. That's the plan.
Nice.
So in Louisville with all of you guys. So, yeah, it's been... While I have given myself maternity leave, there's still a lot going on, and it's really nice, really nice. And two, of course, Love at First Shot was, you know, we shot that this year. I was not pregnant on the range. I chose not to do that. Mm-hmm. Just wanted to, you know, kind of stay away from firearms at that point, just for a lot of, you know, different reasons. But I was able to do the intros and outros and work with my dear friend Julie Golub, who did all of the instruction, of course. And she was fantastic, as always.
That is excellent. Well, listen, it sounds like 2015 was a very eventful year for you.
Extremely eventful. That's true.
And it sounds like 2016 is kicking off that way as well.
Yeah, and I'm so excited about it. And I know you guys have a lot going on, too. It's really exciting to see everything that's happening.
Well, we look forward to following your adventures this year.
Thanks.
I'm really excited about the children's book coming out.
I can't wait to show you. Yeah,
that's going
to
be
fun.
Really,
yeah, especially
really cool.
As a dad, I really, you know, value your input and can't wait to, you know, we want to be teaching firearm safety from a firearms, like a gun owner's perspective, you
right.
know, somebody who really cares and understands firearms. And unfortunately, we've seen it from the outside and they have a very different agenda. So, you know, this is from us. This is, you know, for us. So that's really what I'm hoping to accomplish.
That is awesome. Well, Natalie,
thanks.
Thank you so much for coming by. It's awesome to see you. And hopefully we get to do this again soon.
I hope so. Thank you so much for having me. It's so great to see you
again. It's good to see you too. Natalie Foster with us here on NRA News, Cam and Company. Mark Chestnut, the editor of America's First Freedom, also dropped by earlier today, and we had a chance to spend some time with Mark. Take a look and a listen. here at SHOT Show 2016 in Las Vegas, Nevada. And who did we run into but our friend Mark Chestnut, the editor of America's First Freedom. Mark, how are you, sir?
I'm great, Cam. How are you doing?
I am excellent. All right, so hopefully our audience is well aware of America's First Freedom. But if we've got some maybe newbies tuning in, folks who don't get the magazine, let's talk about the magazine first, because
sure.
The magazine did come first. What's America's sure. First Freedom's mission, Mark?
We started the magazine. It's been almost 16 years ago, right before the big Al Gore election. And our mission the whole time and what we've tried to accomplish, and I think we've done a fairly good job at it, is keeping NRA members informed on the latest on the Second Amendment and some of the battles we face. Legislative stuff, but important issues also. A lot of interviews with important people, and also some interviews with people that you might not find somewhere else. You know, some of the interesting things we've done lately is some of the sheriffs that are calling for armed citizenry to stop terrorism and violent crime and stuff like that, which you don't really hear a lot in the mainstream media, of course.
Absolutely not.
So I think when we started the magazine, there was kind of a question if we could make a magazine about the Second Amendment, mm-hmm. and I guess we've proved that we can. It's almost 16 years, and we have around 650,000 readers each month. So it's been a wild ride, but a lot of fun.
You know, there are a lot of magazines out there, Mark, that would love circulation numbers like that.
Yeah, there was a time when I think behind Rifleman and Hunter, we were bigger than any of the other gun magazines. But we're kind of cyclical on election year. You know, we'll have a huge boost, which mm-hmm. I expect us to do this year. Yeah, we usually go somewhere between 600 and 750,000 people, which, you know, 750,000 people isn't anything to sneeze at.
Absolutely so. Right. And beyond now the print edition, America's First Freedom has expanded online.
Right. It's americasfirstfreedom.org. And we have tons of new content on a daily basis. We'll have three new feature stories, and anywhere from half dozen to eight or nine small news bits.
Wow!
And then if anything happens during the day, we'll try to get something on in the afternoon if we need to. You know, so
you're putting out almost a magazine a day.
It's a lot. You understand from doing Cam's Corner.
Mm-hmm.
From going one a month to four or five a month.
Right.
That's what I've done with my editor's letter, plus all the other content we have. So.
But, you know, the nice thing about the online world is that with the Cam's Corner column, for instance, in the print edition, we're all confined to space,
right?
There's only so many words that you can write because it's got to fit into that column space.
That's right.
But online, you've got that freedom to expand and expound a little bit more. Mm. You can kind of get... it's not unusual to find a 1,500 or 2,000 word
sure.
online piece
right.
in print journalism, not just for America's First Freedom, but print journalism all around. Those right. longer form pieces are becoming less and less common.
Right. But that's kind of a two-edged sword, because used to we'd know we'd have a limited amount of content and we could get that content, and now when there's unlimited place to put it, trying to find enough content to keep everybody satisfied with what they're getting, because there's a lot of people that get up every morning and I'm sure start searching websites for Second Amendment news and mm-hmm. and what the latest is, what different taxes on their gun rights and stuff like that, and we'd like them to come to americasfirstfreedom.org first, and we'll hopefully have what you need there.
Well,
you
know, listen, so. I got to say, I mean, it is, and I'm not just saying this because I'm a part of it, right. but it is a fantastic website. It's a great resource for me mm-hmm. as the host of NRA News Cam & Company. It is one of those places that I stop, as you say, every day mm-hmm. to look and see what's going on. And, you know, there's we've got a lot in the online world. There's a lot of aggregators, right? There are a lot of people
right.
who will take what somebody else wrote and they'll repackage it and repurpose it for their own website. That doesn't really happen at America's First Freedom. I mean, you've got a lot of original content being
right.
produced.
Right, and that's a lot easier way to do it.
Right.
It's just not as much good news for our readers. And I think we've been really pretty successful with that. We've had some pretty good numbers. I was talking to Doug Hamlin from NRA Publications, and in December, between First Freedom and the Hunter and the Rifleman and a few other NRA Pubs websites, they had 2.4 million unique viewers in 1 month, and I think that was up by over a half million from any other month before. And I think
wow.
a lot of it is the attack on gun rights, the executive orders mm-hmm. rolled up into an election year, and we have Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders trying to one-up each other constantly on how they can be the most anti-gun, and every time people hear that, they go out and buy two new guns. You know,
right.
it's an interesting phenomenon to witness, but the numbers are growing, and it's just really exciting.
And as the distrust of the media, you know, I didn't think, frankly, it was possible for Americans to trust the media less than they did, let's say, 2 or 3 years ago. But we've apparently found a way.
Yeah.
I think it's so important that gun owners have a resource where they can go and get the skinny, not just from a pro-gun point of view, but from a knowledgeable point of view. I mean,
right.
There are so many reporters in the you know, broader media world out there who are covering this issue. They don't know the first thing about this
right.
issue.
Yeah, and it's kind of a shame if you see. You may not. I trended on CNN the week before last, which I didn't really enjoy that much. But I wrote a story about a couple of legislators in New York who had introduced a ban or a limit on the number of bullets you could buy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you guys covered it extensively.
Oh, yeah.
If you had a six shooter, you could buy 18 bullets every 90 days or 54, I don't know. Some, they don't even sell a box of 54 anyway.
Right.
It was ridiculous, but I don't remember what the name I called them was. I said something a little out of place. The art went a little overboard apparently, so. And they were calling for the attorney general to investigate threats to these New York lawmakers. But they got on CNN, and the two ladies that were on CNN interviewing her, they knew nothing about guns or bullets either. So the whole conversation was so comical. I'm going to write another column about that part of it, because it was unbelievable that they would think that, you know, 54 bullets, you know, that seems pretty reasonable to me. And,
yeah.
You know, take the kids to the range, and they can go through that in about 3 minutes.
Right.
Know? So.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you and I remember that. And you know, the focus was on the graphic as opposed to the actual story.
Right.
Which is, you know, a great media trick, right, when they don't want to talk about the
right.
issue.
And
well,
then
let's find something else to talk about.
They hardly talked about the issue at all.
Right.
Because they knew that the legislation was stupid. Asinine is what I call it.
I don't think that's out of line. It is asinine.
Well, then when the lady read it on air, she read it as insane, and I thought, she can't even read either. I would rather not trend on CNN if I can, but when people do stuff so extremely ridiculous, I mean, you got to. That's one of the fun things about the web. Somebody says something dumb every day that we can write about or
right.
talk about, and they're trying to shape the conversation with misinformation. And if the people come to our website, I have friends that I run into at church or at the range, or say, what do you tell somebody about universal background checks? Or what do you tell somebody about this? And I'll send you something when I get home, send them to 3 or 4 links that are mm-hmm. written by people who know what they're doing, interviewing constitutional scholars
right.
and experts on the Second Amendment. And then they kind of gives them a little bit more ammunition to go out there and make an argument, an educated argument against somebody who's not educated at all.
Absolutely.
That doesn't mean they'll change their mind, because that's part of not being educated on the topic. But
that's true.
It's
but
a start.
You can lead someone to knowledge, but you can't make them think.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Well, listen, you keep doing what you're doing, Mark, and I appreciate you spending some time with us today.
Thanks, Cam. Appreciate it.
Mark Chestnut from America's First Freedom. Again, the website for America's First Freedom is americasfirstfreedom.org. All right. And is that F-I-R-S-T?
1-S-T.
Okay.
America's 1-S-T.
1-S-T. All right. There you go. Mark, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Cam.
We'll see you
Enjoyed
soon.
It.
All right. We have more from 2016's SHOT Show in Las Vegas, Nevada, here at the Sands Convention Center. But we do need to take a quick time out just for a moment. When we come back, John Popp with Kelly Ann Pigeon of Armed and Feminine. Also, later in the hour, talk with our friend Christy Titus of I Am Forever on NRA News. And she's also a part of, you know, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation's Team Elk on Outdoor Channel. We'll talk about I Am Forever. Also talk about that new social media campaign, Hunting is Conservation. Stick around. We've got a lot more in Ray News Cam and Company coming up right after this.
Speaking with David Helmer with NRA Field Ops. David, talking about Youth Education Summit, the YES program here at NRA. Great program here at NRA. What's it all about?
Well, the Youth Education Summit is a leadership week we have here in D.C. where 45 to 50 kids from all around the country come in, and it's really 7 action-packed days where they learn about American history, government, and the importance of the Second Amendment.
Why does NRA do this? Why is it important that NRA put on a program like this?
We thought it would be important to, you know, get the leaders, future leaders of tomorrow, involved in the government and really get a feeling of how they can be active citizens and make a difference.
And what's the typical YES kid like who comes and does the program?
The typical kid is a leader amongst their peers. They you know, they really want to make a difference for their country. They're interested in the government. They're interested, a lot of them are interested in the military and shooting and, you know, things like that, even though that's not a requirement.
Right. It's not just a Second Amendment program. You learn
right.
everything that happens here in D.C.
Right.
And it culminates in a week here, and then there's scholarships too, right?
Right. So at the end of the week, we give out $15,000 in scholarships to the kids who perform the best in debates against each other and really, you know, show their leadership qualities throughout the week. And then the students have 9 months to apply for the grant scholarship application, which is when they go back to their home communities and they make a positive difference by bringing NRA programs and, you know, establishing shooting programs there.
Wow, it's really cool. And I've met some of these kids. They're amazing kids, and I'm sure they get as much out of it as you guys do working with them.
They really do. I mean, they debate against each other and really form bonds. And, you know, by the end of the week, it's more like a family.
That's awesome. All right, about 20 seconds left. How do we get more information about Youth Education Summit?
For more information, you can go to friendsofnra.org/yes or email yes@nrahq.org.
All right, David Helmer, NRA Field Ops. It's the YES Program Youth Education Summit. Great stuff and great work you're doing. Thanks for what you do, and thanks for being on NRA News.
Thank you.
Speaking with Daniel Subia with NRA Education and Training. Daniel, welcome to NRA News. We're talking about a neat thing you guys have going on in August. It's the Scholastic Pistol Program, Pistol Camp. I understand it's something brand new you guys are doing. What's going on?
Yeah, absolutely. This is our first annual Scholastic Pistol Program, Pistol Camp, taking place August 7th through the 9th at the Illinois State Association Range in Kankakee, Illinois. Scholastic Pistol Program itself is a new program, relatively new. It's been around for about 3 years. This is where we take young shooters from age 12 on up through college and have them participate in an action-style shooting where they're shooting at metal targets, four different stages, and they shoot at these targets for time, and it's a lot of fun. They have two categories. They have the junior category shoots 22 long rifle pistols, and the centerfire category, where you can shoot centerfire handguns, most preferably 9mm, but other calibers are most certainly welcome.
Cool. And what's the age range we'll see qualify for this type of camp?
The age range is 12 on up through college-level shooters.
All right. And so let's talk about the typical shooter. Like, what will they bring as far as to shoot with? What type of handgun will they use?
Oh, the wonderful thing is at this camp, if they want to shoot the 22 long rifle pistols, they don't even need to bring any firearms with them. We will provide the pistol and the ammunition. However, if they want to shoot a center fire, they would bring their own pistol and ammunition.
Great. So this is a great thing that you guys are doing at NRA Education Training to get people, youngsters who want to get involved in the shooting sports, and and what a great way to start. That's wonderful. Speaking with Daniel Subi with NRA Education and Training, it's the Scholastic Pistol Program Pistol Camp coming up August 7th through 9th. How do they get more information?
If they want more information or if they would like me to send them a registration package, they can email me at coaching@nrahq.org.
Your first source for Second Amendment news and information. It is NRA News, Cam and Company, sponsored by Nosler, and our on-location sponsor this year, Adcore Defense. Want to welcome to the program right now, Jason Howarden of The Blaze. How are you, man?
Very good, very good. Vegas has been fantastic to me so far.
Yeah?
Absolutely.
It's hard for it to be bad to you when you're here at SHOT Show.
Well, I'm
right?
Right. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of Vegas, like as a place, just because I'm not a big gambler and everything, but when SHOT Show's in town and you have so many, I mean, you got... I've been hanging out with Navy SEALs. Like, it's just not fair. Like,
know, right?
That it's work. I'm hanging out with Navy SEALs and shooting with them, and it's just, it's really not fair that this is my job.
Yeah. Okay. So shooting with Navy SEALs. Let's talk about this for a second, because something happened to you. Is this yesterday that this happened?
It was Sunday.
It was Sunday. Something happened to Jason on Sunday that he will carry with him for the rest of his life.
Correct.
You outshot Marcus Luttrell?
Well, let's...
That's what you told me. Spreading around, Marcus.
Hold
I just
on.
Want you to know that's what this
let's,
guy is saying here. So let's...
Let's add some caveats
some
here.
Context here.
Yeah, we need a lot of...
That's the top headline.
Caveats. Yes, it was... Okay, it was a...
Marcus Luttrell and Jason Howarden squared off. You won't believe what happened next.
Okay,
that would be the
it.
The
that's,
headline.
That's
if that
not
was,
it, and that wasn't it, because we wrote it. But look, here's the deal. It was a one-shot... competition,
okay,
with an Axelson AR-15.
Yeah.
Yes, one
great
shot.
Great gun, by the
okay.
way.
Okay,
right?
It's a great gun. Shot fantastic. One shot from a crouched position,
at a target probably 30 yards away.
Okay.
And so with one shot, a broken clock can be right twice a day. Right? And so, and it's not like his shot was a bad shot. I beat him by like less than half of an inch. And so I would never say, and I just want to say for the, everyone listening, I need you to listen. And Marcus, if you're listening, I would never sound as good as a shot as Marcus Luttrell, period.
Nope.
And you put us on a anything tactical where we're talking about moving targets and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, come on. Who do you want with a gun beside you, me or Marcus? It's not even a conversation that we
that is have. That is true. But it seems to me like I've also heard the words, I outshot Marcus Luttrell, come out of your mouth. So I'm just saying, like, you didn't say you were a better shot.
No.
You didn't say, like, hey, you know what, when it comes to it, just put the gun in my hands and, yeah, and leave Marcus out
not.
Of it. You never said that. You never said anything like that.
But if we're speaking factually, one shot, I outshot Marcus Luttrell.
And I will say, if Marcus is watching this at some point, the tone of voice was amazement. Like, I can't believe that I did that, right?
Of course it is. I mean, the whole premise of the story, first of all, I didn't know if he would do it. I thought it was super cool for him to even say yes in the first place.
Yeah.
But the whole time, the story was, like, pre-written to say, Marcus Luttrell kicked my butt in shooting. So when it went the other way, I didn't really know how to react to it. And I didn't know if his SEAL buddies were going to be like, look at this guy, thinking he can come in here and say he beat Marcus. But no, it was a fun time. I'm always going to remember that. And it's like a memory. I mean, who gets to say that, even with one shot?
I just wish I could be there next week when you're at work at the Blaze and all of a sudden the door bursts open. And what's this stuff I'm hearing, Jason? I would love to be a fly on the wall for that. So tell me, now are you based out of the Dallas office there?
Yes, I am.
I got to say, I've had the opportunity to go there. We were there for Mercury One event, I believe it was about a year ago, a little bit more than a year ago now, when Glenn had his Sporting Clays tournament.
Yeah.
Raising money for charity. That seems like a fun place to work.
It's the best place to work. And if you've been in the studios, it's like a wonderland of Glenn's imagination.
Oh,
because
yeah.
One day you can come in and there's, you know, there's a helicopter in the lobby. It's like, what? Like, what are you doing? Or like one day he'll have an idea and there'll be like a giant submarine in the office. Like, just like that kind of stuff. So it's always, you never know what's going on. It's always a fun place to work, and the environment is just that of creativity all the time, 24/7.
It's really interesting. You know, I do a podcast called 40 Acres and a Fool that the Blaze Radio Network distributes on demand.
Absolutely.
And so I feel like I'm a tiny little part of the Blaze family.
You're part of the family. You're holding on to the link, man.
Right? Exactly. And it's, you know, I got to say, I really, all of the people that I know who work there, they're just good folks. I love what you guys are trying to do. I love, you know, independent media and being a voice for Americans beyond, you know, I say this all the time. Most of our news comes from three places, and really two. Midtown Manhattan, inside the Beltway, Washington, D.C., and Los Angeles, California. And there's nothing wrong with those places. But that's not where most Americans live.
And never underestimate the power of the media to literally shape a narrative on an issue completely.
Right.
Because what people perceive to be reality is what they hear. So if they're all saying the same thing from one perspective and you're not getting the other, then that becomes your reality for some people who aren't as independent thinking and don't have time to do their own research and stuff like that. So I think with independent media doing the other side of the gun issue, doing the other side of other issues, talking more to veterans and on these issues, I don't think the mainstream media does enough of. If I could, that would be my job all day, talking to vets, hanging with SEALs, talking about the stuff that they need, their issues, the charities. We've done stories on some of the charities that have been going on here, which are amazing.
Special Operations Wounded Warriors.
Absolutely.
And, right, and the Lone Survivor Foundation.
And, yeah, they got $10,000 from Brownells yesterday, the Special Operations Wounded Warriors did. So just stuff like that is going on all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not going to see that on the front pages at other places, but you're going to see it on our front page because it's important, and those stories need to be told, man.
And, you know, it's interesting, too, because you talk about especially these charities. A lot of them are started by veterans. You may have a celebrity or two associated with them, but really, I mean, this is the military taking care of their own, and then I think supporters of the military taking care of those men and women when we can. But, it's weird. Like, I mean, Hollywood must have 5 or 10 galas a night for various causes.
Save the geckos of the rainforest and stuff like that.
Right. And yet I don't ever see, I mean, look, there are certainly celebrities who are out there in L.A. and elsewhere who are supporters of the military, but I would have to say that's not, it doesn't seem like that's a priority for the Hollywood establishment.
Well, is that, is being perceived to support, because to some people, if you support the military, and I hate this premise, but if you support the military, you support war, right? A lot of people feel that way. Mm-hmm. So to be perceived as giving to the military, a lot of people are afraid that they're going to be perceived as supporting the wars, which is just crap. You can support the military because they don't say we're going to war for this reason. They volunteer, they give their lives, they say we'll die for this country. You tell me where to go, I'll do it. To me, that's completely two different things. You want to be mad at Washington for sending them there, go ahead. But don't punish them when they come back and they need our help.
Right, absolutely. So who is the Blaze audience, Jason?
It's the average American middle class person who, you know, that you don't hear enough of. Like they get kind of drowned out with some of the like the media narratives of, you know, they're just people who they work 9 to 5, sometimes more. They like their guns. They just want to be left alone, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they don't really have a voice per se. And that's kind of what I love about the Blaze, because there's millions and millions and millions of these people who feel like they found kind of a community where they can all come together and talk about some of these issues that don't make front pages. And they want to see, you know, Marcus Luttrell talking about Axe Askelson. They want to see these kind of stories that you're seeing, these gun stories happening here that they're just not going to see anywhere else. So I would say they're just your average person. Like the vast majority of people that they kind of want to make you think, some media does, that they're minorities, but they're really not. They're the more of the silent major majority of the country. I would say 60% of the country is kind of what our audience is.
So do you have a specific beat in your coverage and your reporting for
the
place?
I've gotten some promotions. So
oh, nice.
I kind of run the front page during the day, kind of direct coverage, what stories we're covering, headlines, stuff like that. But when it comes to guns, I'm the guy, because I just have the most knowledge, the most experience. So when something like SHOT Show comes up, I have expertise in that. Military stuff I do a lot of because I know the guys, so happy to know them. And you get to work so long and hard for their respect, because that's how they operate.
Yeah.
You don't just walk into a room and they respect you. You got to earn it. And so I love doing that kind of stuff. Walking into a room and knowing they're looking me up and down, trying to figure me out. And I love fighting for their respect and hanging out with them and doing these type of events. So I would say those are my two specialties are guns and military.
Well, listen, man, hopefully it's not going to be a year before we get a chance to hang out again. Will you be at the NRA annual meeting in Louisville this year?
Of course.
Excellent.
Of course I'll be there.
Excellent.
So we can hang out more there. We didn't get to hang out too much here. We've been so busy. It's been a whirlwind already. I've been here since Sunday,
see,
and it feels like I just got
this
here.
This is work. I mean, it really, you know, yes, we're here and it's a lot of fun and we're meeting our friends, but now this is actually work when you're out here. You know that.
It is work. And it may not seem like, because I think the stories I've done, you know, I got to shoot with Marcus. Then I did a 1,000-yard shot with an Armalite rifle. Doing all these fun stuff, hanging out with the coolest people. And people are like, wow, this guy. And, yeah, part of it is that amazing. But a lot of it, the 80% of the rest of it is hard work. And you're running around. You're trying to figure out what the heck you're going to do.
Right. Yeah. All right. Well, listen, man, hopefully we can catch up again soon. We'd love to have you out, by the way, to D.C., to Farmville, Virginia. Come out and hang out. We'll shoot some guns. And
teach me how to farm. That'd be a fantastic video for some of the people. That's like one of the last things that I don't know how to do.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right.
Nothing
well,
about it.
Wait till the snow's gone and then come out in the spring.
Trust me, that's not a problem.
All right, brother. Jason Howard joins from the Blaze.
Thanks,
with
guys.
Us here at NRA News Game of Company. Thank you. We'll let you get back to work. I'm sure
sounds
there's some
good
headlines that need to be promoted there on the homepage. John Pop, our producer extraordinaire with NRA News Game of Company. He has been busy doing a lot of interviews that you will see here on NRA News Cam and Company in the coming days and weeks. He actually had a chance to sit down and spend some time with Kelly Ann Pigeon of Armed and Feminine. Take a look and a listen.
I'm speaking with Kelly Ann Pigeon with Armed and Feminine. Kelly Ann, welcome to NRA News. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for being here. Tell folks, what is Armed and Feminine? What do you do and why?
Armed and Feminine is my business that I created to teach firearms training for women only.
When I got into shooting several years ago, there was no one I could find that was female, and it was a little difficult because men are from Mars, women are from Venus.
No.
So I went to an NRA training through the Well-Armed Woman and became an instructor, and I came back and started this, and it took off like wildfire. People came from all over the tri-state area. I'm in Pennsylvania, and they loved the idea of women teaching women. You know, we have to know, how does this work? What is it called? What does it do? We have to feel things, touch things, and that's what the entire classes are based around, is women teaching women, because we're different. We have smaller hands. We're not as strong. We're curvier in different ways. Totally different on how you have to learn how to shoot.
Right, and especially with certain firearms, the fit, whether it's revolver, semi-automatic, if you're handgun, it's a different fit for a woman's hands versus a man's.
Absolutely, and that's actually one of the draws about my class, is that when someone comes, all they have to do is bring a lunch. I bring everything, eyes, ears, materials, and an array of firearms, and so do my other instructors. So they have an opportunity to pick and choose from all different firearms to see what fits for them. And everything is different, and it's funny, I have a video out that akins the firearm to buying your bra, if we can go there on this segment.
Of course, we always go there here.
But, and I say that nobody can buy your firearm but you. You know, when someone said, oh, my husband bought this for me, and I just want to roll my eyes and go, really?
Honey, I got you a 44 Magnum. It's called the Dirty Harry Special. Enjoy.
Exactly. And they're never going to want to shoot again. Like, guys are like, honey, try this big, big firearm. So we start with 22s till we get all the fundamentals down pat, and then we move up to 380s and 9s until they figure out what it is that they like. But I tell them, you know, it's just like your bra. It's got to be comfortable. It's got to fit right. You got to be able to wear it every day, and it's got to be able to do its job. So only you can do that.
Perfect. Speaking with Kellyanne Pigeon with Armed and Feminine. So, Kellyanne, you say you're from PA. What part of the state?
I live near Pittsburgh.
Okay. I'm a PA guy myself, and in Virginia now, but it's always good to have a fellow Pennsylvanian here.
I find them everywhere. Actually, I found a man right who lives not by me from
That's
here.
Awesome. So why was it important that you do – you talked about you'd find it, but – you went way beyond. I can't find a woman to instruct me. You started this whole thing, and it takes a lot of work and a lot of drive.
It does.
What drove you to do this?
I know how much I enjoyed it and what learning this trade did for me in terms of confidence, et cetera. I'm all about mentoring women. I won the Athena Award locally for mentoring women and trying to help move them. And in the classes, I found women who were housekeepers, from housekeepers to attorneys and everybody in between. And what I saw is that women who may be fearful in one way or another, once you teach them how to safely handle a firearm, their confidence just goes through the roof. And if they're having a bad day or they feel like their back's up against the wall for something, they just have to remember, hey, I know how to shoot a gun, and I can do that pretty well. I can do anything. And so, you know, I just enjoy helping people. My real job is in human services, and folks look to me for leadership sort of all the time. And so it was just sort of another calling that I had, and I found it to be a passion. I thought, if I'd only started this 10 years earlier, this would have been awesome. So I enjoy it. I enjoy every minute of it.
How can folks get more information about Armed and Feminine?
Actually, they can visit my website. It's armedandfeminine.com, and all the tabs are there, from frequently asked questions, class descriptions, et cetera. We do teach NRA courses, and we teach USCCA courses as well through my other instructors. All my classes are pretty much sold out for the next season. It's crazy. My entire 2016 season sold out in 5 days. 5 days. I had to add more slots to that during the week to try to just meet the demand.
Okay. So before we run out of time here.
Sure.
What's your message to women who are watching us going, should I try that? What do you tell them?
Don't be afraid. You can conquer your fears. It's worth it. And we need to move from being the protected to becoming the protector. And women will save the Second Amendment.
Wow. That's awesome.
Well, they will.
That's awesome.
Give me 30 more seconds. Because women who are the matriarchs of their family, whatever they like, believe in, and support, so will their children. And so women are on the move, and we're moving this, and we're going to be a big part of saving the Second Amendment.
Kellyanne, thank you so much. Keep doing what you're doing. Thanks for being on NRA News.
John, thank you. It was my pleasure.
Again, Kellyanne Pigeon of Armed and Feminine. How about that? The entire 2016 course schedule that she had filled up in 5 days. But no, no, Americans are turning their back on their Second Amendment rights, right? Yeah, that's what the anti-gun folks will tell you. By the way, an alderman in Chicago, Illinois, putting the brakes on a possible gun store in the city of Chicago. Yeah, yeah, how about that? You know, right now, Chicago doesn't have a gun store within the city limits. And I don't think the powers that be in Chicago want a gun store to open up inside the city limits. They've also tried to limit ranges opening up inside the city limits of Chicago. And again, they'll say, we're not anti-gun, we're just gun safety advocates. If you make it harder for people to acquire a firearm legally, if you make it harder for people to get educated and trained on the use of that firearm, you're not a gun safety advocate. You're actually, you may be anti-gun, but you're actually encouraging irresponsible gun ownership. This is not gun sense. This is not going to lead to preventing gun violence. It's just pure and simple an anti-gun move. Christopher O'Connor, he's a resident of Irving Park. He is trying to open up again that gun store in the River West neighborhood of Chicago. DNA Info Chicago has the story. Stephanie Luley reported that Alderman Walter Burnett Jr. said that he would not allow a gun shop in his ward. Can you believe that? O'Connor wants to open up Firearms Defense Training Center, which would be a range and a gun store, in a warehouse. It's in an industrial corridor of the River West neighborhood. And the alderman says, no way. Apparently, last week, DNA Info says the alderman said that he would support the range if residents were okay with it, since legal gun owners need a safe place to shoot. And this week, however, he said that he was unaware that the proposal also included a gun store. Uh-huh. So he says he's cool with the range, but not cool with the store. Meanwhile, the entrepreneur who wants to open up this business says the range can't survive without the revenue generated from the store. He said they go hand in hand. While the range is fine for people who already possess firearms, you can't bring in new customers. To be a successful business, it needs all of the parts. And again, the elected officials in Chicago, at least many of them anyway, don't want those parts in place. They want to keep the Second Amendment out of the Windy City. Stick around. We'll be right back with much more NRA News Cam and Company from SHOT Show 2016 in Las Vegas, Nevada.
I'm speaking with Dale Pancake with the Italian Firearms Group. Dale, welcome back to NRA News. What is the Italian Firearms Group?
Well, the Italian Firearms Group is a group of four companies that are operating here in the United States now. We have the Sabati Firearms, like you see here in front of you. We have Pedersoli, which are the replica Old West-style firearms. We have the Fair Firearms, which is the Rossini shotguns and rifles. And then we also have the Tangfolio, some of the Tangfolio products.
How did this particular organization come about?
Well, we were visiting with the Italian group, which those four businesses in Italy are friends. And so they approached us at one of the shows, and over a period of a couple of years, we decided we want to be part of that organization.
That's pretty cool. So tell us a little bit about Sabati. What do they specialize in? What do they do?
Well, Sabati is very well known in Europe and across the world outside of the United States for their rifles. The Sabati rifles hold most of the world records, especially all the European records. Their tactical rifles, which are on the table here, are used by many of the foreign military organizations. And so we have started bringing them in. We're going to reintroduce them here to the U.S. and try and make them a household name here.
So, Dale, there's four different companies in the Italian Firearm Group, but the ones that we have here are the Sabati ones. So let's talk about these firearms. They're aesthetically striking. They're beautiful firearms, but I understand they're very functional, too.
Absolutely. These rifles you see here are kind of a representation of the different lines that we carry. We have our tactical rifles. We have our varmint or target rifles. We have our hunting rifle. We have our scout rifle. And so, you know, what you see here is a pretty fair representation of our bolt-action line. The barrels are going to come in a heavy barrel for tactical use, a less heavy or a medium contour for, hunting, You can use them for whatever you want. And then, of course, our lightweight rifles that you'd carry all day.
Right. This is a bit of a rifle to carry.
It is. These are very heavy. You know, this rifle, for instance, weighs about 13 pounds without the scope on it. And it is a tactical rifle specifically designed for police, law enforcement, and military. This one is in .308. We offer these rifles in .223, .243, .308, each of these rifles in the different variations. The barrel in the taper, you can order in any of the rifles. You can order it in the stainless or in the blue. The other thing you'll notice on this rifle is we have our adjustable comb and length.
Speaking with Dale Pancake with the Italian Firearm Group, so what are some of the features of this particular rifle?
Well, on this particular rifle, you'll see that it's in stainless steel, first off. It has adjustable comb, adjustable length, a pull. The triggers are adjustable. It features, this is a .308 caliber, and in our .308s, we offer a brand new feature, which is called a multi-radial rifling. It's a exclusive feature to Sabati. It increases the actual velocity 10% or more over standard rifling, easier to clean, stabilizes the bullet much quicker upon exit from the barrel. So you have an inherently accurate rifle right out of the box.
So these are all the Sabati ones. We'll talk a little bit about the other products. Who are the other folks in the group?
We have Fair, which are our shotguns and double rifles, and those are made in Italy by Isidre Rossini. We offer also in Sabati, we offer our over-under shotgun, our double express rifles, and we also offer Petersoli, which is the Old West style reproductions.
So, Dale, for someone, these names are new to them, why should they be checking out these particular brands in the Italian Firearms Group?
Well, they're all very high quality made. You can look at any of our different lines. They're all top drawer. They're all exceptionally accurate. They're reliable. When you get one, we never have a return because they really have good quality control to factory. We have good availability now here in the United States. We have a warehouse here. It is totally stocked with all of our models. So you can get anything you see in the catalog, you can get it immediately.
Dale Pancake, thanks. How do people get more information about the Italian Firearms Group?
Well, you can go to our website, which of course is italianfirearmsgroup.com. And from there, it's very simple to click on any of the lines that you're interested in. It'll take you direct there and give you our information.
Dale, thanks for so much for what you do. Thanks for being on NRA News.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for being a part of this edition of NRA News, Cam and Company, sponsored by Nosler, our remote broadcast sponsor this year as well. Our friends at Adcor Defense. I'm going to be heading down to the Adcor Nosler booths right after we sign off the year here. But before we go, I want to welcome to the program Christy Titus in person.
Yay!
Not on the phone.
I know. It's the first.
How are you?
I'm fabulous. I'm really great. It's good to be at SHOT Show.
Well, it's great to have you on the program here. And you know, we've talked about I Am Forever on NRA News throughout the course of the season. And, you know, this is, I mean, it was a really interesting show. There were so many intricate and moving parts to this, so many different aspects of the program. But you know, the storylines that we follow, we got to witness these women really push themselves and challenge mm-hmm. themselves, get out of their comfort zone, and you know, really explore the great outdoors. You're working with Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation
yes.
on a new campaign that I think is really interesting. It kind of goes hand in hand with this.
Absolutely,
it's all about conservation mm-hmm. and letting Americans who aren't hunters know that, hey, you know what, hunters are conservationists, right?
Absolutely, and this is a campaign that goes hand in hand with our currently airing television show called Army of Team Elk. It airs on the Outdoor Channel, and what we wanted this campaign to be is more of a digital format where people can learn how and why hunting is conservation, what that means, and show kind of the relevancy of hunting, hunters, and firearms ownership and sales in the United States and how that goes to support conservation as a whole. Our hope is that all of our friends that support this way of life take this digital media platform and share it and spread with the word, the world, the value of what we're really doing as hunters.
Because, you know, a lot of Americans, I think, are supportive of
yes.
hunting. But then we've got the very vocal anti-hunting
yes.
Activists. And then we also have, ignorant celebrities. I'm not going to call them idiots because I think many of them are smart, but they don't know the first thing about this issue.
Exactly.
And so when they find a picture of a hunter who's posted their Facebook picture of the deer that they got or the bear that they got, and all of a sudden it's, oh, you hate animals. Hey, actually, no. Yeah. No, hunters don't hate animals. Hunters love animals. In fact, if you are an avid hunter, it makes sense, right? You want to make sure that there are always animals around to hunt.
Well, hunters are truly the first crusaders towards conservation and wildlife management. And, in the late 1930s, we self-imposed a tax to create critical funds to go towards wildlife management, conservation, habitat stewardship. And now, annually, we're generating over $1.6 billion a year that are going into wild places for people to spend time with their families, not only hunting, but hiking and recreating and just enjoying the land. And you'll see in a lot of urban areas, there's a huge disconnect with the land and the appreciation of the land and kind of a dissolving movement of the family unit. And wild places really affords an opportunity for people to get out, reconnect with their families, spend some time afield doing beautiful things, connecting with nature. It's not all just about hunting. This is about conserving America's wild places.
And, as somebody who grew up in the suburbs and, lived in either the suburbs or an urban environment for all of my life until a couple of years ago, you're right. I mean, when you live in a city and you're walking down the street, you're walking on concrete.
Absolutely.
And you might see a tree or two that is also in a planter, right? You don't see stars in the sky at night. That was one of the first things I realized is, holy cow, there's so many stars. When I moved and there's the Milky Way, it's real. You can still see the Milky Way. When you feel the changing of the seasons, and you can see every day how nature changes in these small yet noticeable ways, you do get connected to the land and you can reconnect. And that's the thing. You don't have to have grown up in a rural area to find that connection. You don't even have to live in a rural area to find that connection, but you do have to get out to those wild places.
Well,
that
what you're
about.
Seeing in a lot of really urban communities is this local vore movement where people are saying buy organic, buy local. And it's this huge movement and hunters are living that movement. We understand what goes into providing meat for the table. We understand that there's a sacrifice from an animal that goes into that. And there's a respect and admiration that is given with that sacrifice that many that go to a grocery store and buy shrink wrap meat don't understand.
I was having this conversation with Mark Wills yesterday, the country singer.
I hunted with Mark and his daughter Macy this year on Team Elk. So tune in second quarter on Outdoor Channel.
Okay,
you
perfect.
Guys can
because
see
he was talking about his daughter and how she got into hunting. She's got some health issues, and so she can't eat store-bought meat. And Mark said, he posted a picture of his daughter with her deer that she got a couple of weeks ago. He said, people were telling him in the comment section, like, oh, you're a celebrity. Why don't you just go to the grocery store and buy your food like everybody
else?
They're
missing the point.
Right? Exactly.
They're missing the point. When you watch that episode and you see Mark and Macy afield, and Macy, when I met her, she was smaller than me, and now she's taller than her father at 12 years old.
Wow.
But they're spending time afield, they're walking through the woods, and they're holding hands. And to have her experience taking her elk with her father at her side, they created memories that are going to last an absolute lifetime. It changed Macy's life, and she's actually going to become an ambassador, kind of a supporting ambassador for this program. We're trying to get more kids involved, and kids really need to understand the value of wildlife and wild places.
They really do. My youngest daughter is 10, and she has decided she wants to be a taxidermist when she grows up.
Totally random,
that's what
but
she,
awesome.
That's what she asked for. She asked for a book about taxidermy for Christmas, and she loves going and exploring in the woods and finding these skulls and, what was this animal belong to? And
Absolutely.
She'll look it up. And it really is, if you can put down the video game controller, if you can turn off the television, not during prime time, and, not anything like that, but just for even a couple hours a week, just go outside and really just experience what life is like beyond a television screen, and it really is amazing the impact that it can have on your kids. You don't have to raise a vidiot.
No.
You can raise those kids with respect and love for the great outdoors, and then they become conservationists too. And then guess what? We all get to reap the benefits.
Absolutely. I think the most important thing is that people tune in, go to RMEF, go to our website, go to our social media on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, and follow this campaign. It's a once-a-week campaign. It's going to be on Mondays. And please share this message with your social media outlets, whether you enjoy recreational shooting, hunting, if you're an angler. It doesn't matter. We're all here for the same reason. We want to ensure that people that are non-hunters, people that are living in an urban environment, how they understand how we're benefiting the world. We're making it a better place. RMEF has conserved or enhanced over 6.6 million acres since 1984. This is huge numbers. We've opened up access to over 800,000 acres for people to come and enjoy wild places. We need to share this message with mainstream America. People that are supporting anti-hunting groups, anti-firearms groups, they need to understand where and how our lives are contributing to a better America.
Absolutely. I mean, listen, we've only got a couple of minutes here, but in Virginia, where I live, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation has been instrumental in reintroducing elk to southwestern Virginia. Mm-hmm. And you've got, I think, over 400 elk now in the state that weren't there before. There may come a time when the population is big enough that we can actually have an elk season in Virginia. But right now, we've got a species back in the state that we haven't had for hundreds of years.
And you'll see that in Kentucky. Elk Foundation helped reintroduce elk into Kentucky, and now there's over 10,000 free-roaming elk in Kentucky.
Virginia actually had elk from Kentucky.
Yeah. Okay, so now there's actually huntable populations where people can enjoy the experience of elk hunting. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity in the state, but it's a cherished opportunity for sure, and one that wouldn't have been there if it weren't for hunters. And you can see that across the board from multiple species, not just elk. You're talking mule deer, ducks, antelope. If you do the research, this movement of the North American wildlife conservation model is a science-based approach to management of all wildlife, predators and prey animals. And we're taking species that were endangered or threatened, and they're in greater numbers now than they've ever been before.
Yeah. Well, listen, I cannot thank you enough for what you do.
Thank you.
Each and every day, and we're going to help spread the word about this campaign. Again, where can folks find out more information about the social media campaign, Hunting is Conservation?
They can go on rmef.org and or on our social media sites, and then I encourage people to tune into our show, Team Elk on Outdoor Channel, because that's really a place where you can watch a full episode of this magic happening afield.
Right. All right. Christy, thank you so much
for
coming on the program. It's always a pleasure talking with you, and hopefully we'll be able to do this again soon.
Yeah, I hope so.
Christy Titus joining us here on NRA News, Cam and Company. Unfortunately, we are almost out of time for this edition of NRA News, Cam and Company from SHOT Show 2016. But the good news is it's only Wednesday. So tomorrow and Friday, we will also be coming to you here from SHOT Show 2016. At least most of us will be coming to you from SHOT Show 2016. We'll have more on that on tomorrow's program. But Brian Pigman Quokka is going to join us. Jana Waller, our good friend from Skullbound. Pete Brownell of Brownell is also going to join us on the program tomorrow. Katie Pavlich of Town Hall. Richard Grinnell from Fox News. Jason Redman from the Combat Wounded Coalition. J.R. Salzman, a wounded warrior and writer, join us on the program. Clint Romache, our friend, Medal of Honor recipient, talking about AdCorp Defense. Dr. Jacqueline Kelly from Armed and Heels. Rob Pincus from the Personal Defense Network of Moore. It's all coming up on the next edition of NRA News, Cam and Company. Until we talk again, be safe, have fun. We'll see you here soon on another edition of NRA News, Cam and Company.